Suwaboy will always hold a special place in my empty heart, not because I have fond memories working there, but because some of you really liked it when I talked about working there. And I made buckets with those videos compared to what I was making at Suwaboy, which was nice. Apparently I was hashtag relatable enough to connect with millions of people, and it took my channel to where it is today. And then less than 2 weeks later, I made a part two to that video, and I struck an even bigger chord with people.
Who likes the sequel better than the original?
People think that I use the word Suwaboy in my videos so I wouldn't get sued. This is not true. I wasn't successful enough to get sued. They had other problems to deal with at the time. I called it Suwaboy for a joke. In my first video, I said, I used to work at a very small local sandwich shop. I don't know if any of you guys heard of it. It's called Suwaboy. I was making you think that I worked at an unknown place, and then I subverted your expectations by saying I worked at Suwaboy. But now, at this point in my career, I am calling my previous place of employment Suwaboy because I don't want to get subbed. The most requests I get for a video is Suwaboy Part 4, but I never really considered making another one because I don't work there anymore. I have no new stories to talk about the place. But something happened recently, and I do want to talk about it. You see, the Suwaboy I used to work at closed down. And I am so deeply upset at this news that the only way for me to cope is to make one last video about it. So this story happened a couple of years after I quit working at Suwaboy. I was behind on a video, so that meant I was in a mentally damaging mindset called crunch mode, and I had been working all day, and I started getting hungry, and I still hadn't taken Floof on a walk, so I decided to kill two birds with one stone and eat Floof. Just kidding, I decided to take Floof on a walk to my local Suwaboy. And before I entered the store, I picked up Floof and held her in my arms, because I'm not a psychopath. I know taking your dog into a restaurant is tacky and a health code violation, but this is a Suwaboy we're talking about. I know how laid back it is here. There are no rules or health codes. One time when I was working at my Suwaboy, this 10-year-old kid came in wearing a swimsuit and literally nothing else. And he was unsupervised. He didn't want a sandwich, all he wanted was a cookie, but this kid wasn't wearing shoes or a shirt, the two things you need to get service at a restaurant. So did I tell this shirtless delinquent to get lost? No, he had money, so I did business with him. I don't discriminate against shirtless people. Look, his mom was probably at the grocery store next door, and he just got done with swimming lessons, and he said something like, "Mother, I would be most grateful if you let me consume a pastry with high levels of sugar and simple carbohydrates." And his mom probably said, "Yeah, whatever, nerd. Go get something at Suwaboy." So the point of this story is to let you know that I was the kind of employee who, as long as you were willing to pay for your food, didn't care what you were wearing or what health code you were violating. This is a gosh darn Suwaboy. So I walk in with Floof, and it's completely empty, by the way. Seems like I'm the only one in this town that even likes Suwaboy. And the worker, aka the only other person in the store, said, "Is that a service animal?" Floof's not a service animal, unless the service you want is someone to chew up all your stuff and bark at everyone. But she still emotionally supports me when I tell her I'm gonna die alone. She tries to make me feel better by licking the inside of my nose. But I didn't want to lie to this guy about Floof's emotional support status, because if I said yes and he said prove it, I would be in trouble. So like the emotionally stable enough to not need a dog person that I am, I said, no. And he said, "She can't be in here. If the health inspector came in, they would fire me on the spot." Which, like, geez, dude, you're gonna let the health inspector treat you like that? Stand up for yourself once in a while. So I said, "Okay, I'll leave." Yeah, there are other restaurants in walking distance, Suwaboy guy. The ramen place lets me order with Floof in my arms all the time. I know this because I've already been there twice this week, and the only reason I'm even getting Suwaboy is because I don't want the ramen employees thinking that I'm a weird guy who brings my non-emotional support dog everywhere. You missed out, Suwaboy. Do you know who I am? I used to work here. And then the guy called my bluff. He said, "Wait, we can make it fast." As fast as Jimmy John's? This kid's standing up for himself. I'm proud of him. I knew exactly what to tell him. I want a foot-long ham sandwich on Italian bread with American cheese. I know that's the hardest cheese to pull apart with gloves on, but whatever. He sped run putting on the meat and cheese, and then he asked me, "What kind of vegetables?" And in my mind, I went, "Hold on! You didn't ask me if I wanted it toasted! I see what you're doing! You're trying to get this sandwich finished as quickly as possible, so you're not even gonna ask me if I want it toasted and hope I forgot!" Well, it's okay, because I didn't want it toasted, but I'm onto you! And then Floof jumped over the counter, peed on the olives, and bit the guy in the jugular. And then licked the inside of his nose. Some people take their job way too seriously. Well, at least some Subway workers are more laid back like me. Like this one time not too long ago, I went back to the Subway I used to work at, and I didn't recognize any of the people there. But someone did get recognized in that store. Me. One of the workers said, "Are you the guy that made the cartoon about working here?" And I said, "Yeah." And then I decided to make his job interesting by telling him, "Hey kid, this is the place."
What?
"This is where it all happened, kid. These floors are the very same floors that I used to mop. You missed a spot over there. And this kid lost all six of his olives. Okay, I don't use my fame to get into places I'm not supposed to. Usually. But this kid was so excited, and I used to work here, so I asked him, can I go in the back?" Which is probably breaking a bajillion health code violations, but this kid didn't care. He let me in. It had been 3 years since I had been back there, and literally nothing had changed. I don't know if any of you have ever moved out of your parents' house, and then 3 years later you went back to visit and saw your childhood bedroom, but it was that sort of feeling. The chip boxes were still in the same place, inside the freezer all the food was pretty much where I left it, and the bulletin board had all the same papers. One of the papers was a list of all the employees with their names and phone numbers, and that list was so old that it still had all of my old co-workers' names and numbers, and it even had my own name and number still on the sheet. It had been crossed out, but I still went, "Ah!" and I punched it out with a pencil. Maybe that's how my phone number got leaked. And then I thought, I wonder if the other number is still here. In the very back of the room, there was this desk, and I got down on the gross, unmopped floor, and I scooted underneath the desk, and oh my gosh, it's still here. When I used to work there, one of my coworkers found this store's Wi-Fi password and wrote it down on the bottom side of the desk so then everyone could watch Netflix instead of work. And the employee had no idea it was there, and he typed it into his phone, and it still worked. "All right, don't tell people that I told you this," I said. "We can't let anyone know this secret." But then the place closed down, so now no one can get in trouble. Anyways, I'm gonna miss that place. It was gross, and I didn't love working there, but in the end, it was the most memorable job I had as a teenager, as it was the only other job that I had. It formed a good work ethic, I made new friends, and I even got to eat free food sometimes. But now I might get sued for this video, so we'll see what happens. So now, every time I walk into Subway with my non-service animal, a little part of me will be sad that my old Subway is in ruins. Okay, maybe it's not in ruins, but they'll probably turn it into a nail salon or something. Nothing lasts forever, so it's time to give Subway a proper burial. You want to know something sad? I've earned more money from the two Subway videos I made about working at Subway than I did actually working at Subway for over a year. So here we go! Subway Part 3, baby! I still got more to say. I used to work there, in case you didn't know that. When I moved out and was all on my own for college, I was feeling a little lonely and homesick. So one day I decided, hey,
I'm going to get some Subway for lunch. Food that I used to almost eat every day and got for free for over a year, I was going to pay full price for. I just wanted a taste of home. I wasn't expecting to ever tell this story, but it turns out the employee making my sandwich was a huge idiot. As I was waiting in line, I noticed my favorite sandwich, the Turkey Italiano, wasn't on the menu. The Turkey Italiano, by the way, is the same as the Italian BMT, but instead of ham, you put on turkey. Very simple change. I asked the worker, "Do you guys have the Turkey Italiano?" And he said, "No." So then I asked, "Can I get a BMT, but instead of ham, I have turkey?" And you know what he said to me? He said, "No." I don't think I'm asking for too much. At my Subway, the BMT and the Turkey Italiano were the same price, okay? And what do you mean, "No, you can't put on turkey"? Who's stopping you? I know for a fact that you don't count the slices of turkey at the end of the night. Just hook me up, please. I'm feeling sad. So I just got the BMT with all the vegetables because it's more food for the same amount of money and I was a poor college student. And also because screw that guy. Have fun trying to close that sandwich. But then when he was all done, he put my sandwich by the cash register and then he just started helping the next customer. And they hadn't even started making their sandwich. Just ring me up so I can leave and then help the next person. But no, I had to wait for him to finish this person's sandwich. If I wasn't so nice, I would have just took the sandwich and walked off. But I didn't, because I'm so nice. I've realized telling you that story, it sounds like I'm one of those customers who complain about everything and say, "Let me talk to your manager." But really, the whole time I just stood there awkwardly. But I think I can complain a little bit. I used to work at a Subway. I know how things are supposed to work. Subway, if you're somehow watching this, you need to hire more people. Like me. Speaking of me, when I was working at Subway, I never liked wearing my name tag because when I was making people's sandwiches, I hated it when complete strangers would say, "Thanks, James. How did you know?" Oh, right, the name tag. So I never wore my name tag. I just work at Subway, okay? We don't need to know each other on a first name basis. Just take your food. For some reason, I don't like it when strangers know my name. But now that's all thrown out the window. This one time a customer came in and for some reason I couldn't help but feel like I'd seen her somewhere before. Her face was so familiar, but I couldn't put my finger on it. So I made her sandwich, I rang her up, she paid for it, and as she grabbed her stuff she said, "Yeah, I'm going up to my father's funeral this weekend. After my mother died, he couldn't last that long." Oh, that's why I remember her! She came in last week telling me the same story! What are you supposed to say to that? "Yeah, that really sucks. I'm just some underpaid sandwich artist with really bad people skills." Did she really not have anyone else to talk to? That just makes it extra sad. I ended up giving her a free cookie. I'm just kidding. No, I didn't. Luckily, my coworker Corey heard this and he talked to her and he was very nice. Corey's a lot better at being nice to people. One time I was closing the store, I turned off the open sign and I was opening the front door to bring in a table and chair from outside. But while I was bringing in the table, these two old guys got out of their car and asked, "Are you guys closed?" "Yep," is what I would have said if I wasn't so nice. Instead, I said, "Ugh, fine." Even though it was past 10, I let them order their sandwiches. When they came in, the 16-year-old girl I was working with was not happy. They started apologizing for coming in so late. "Oh, I didn't realize places in Arizona close so early. Blah, 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 we're vampires." And I said, "Ugh, it's whatever, just order your sandwiches." And then he said, "Can I have 3 salads?" And I actually laughed. But he didn't laugh. "Oh, you're being serious. I let you in past closing and you want 3 salads? Do you know how many dirty dishes that'll make?" As I was making this guy's 3 salads and 16-year-old girl was making the other guy's 2-foot-long sandwiches, a third guy not associated with these two came in. Guess he didn't see the open sign not illuminated. I finished helping the two old guys and then I started helping the third guy and he asked, "What time do you guys close?" 15 minutes ago. But after everything was said and done, the two old guys tipped us $5 and the third guy tipped us $1. So I mean, between me and the 16-year-old girl, a $3 tip ain't so bad. I actually heard from one of my old coworkers that the husband and wife owners of my old Subway watched my 2 other Subway videos. So they might be watching this one, and I just wanted to say that by letting those 3 guys in, I showed initiative and was looking out for customer satisfaction. Yeah. One time I brought a laser pointer into work because I knew I'd be bored, and I was. Except the boy I was working with was shining it outside at the cars driving by, and I told him not to do that because it's probably stupid illegal and really dangerous. Later, I was going to go clean the bathrooms. I saw the laser pointer on the counter, and I said, "Hey dude, while I'm cleaning the bathrooms, don't shine the laser pointer at the cars." I told him that. When I was all finished cleaning, though, I saw him sitting by the window just shining the laser at the cars. At first, I wanted to go up to him and say, "Dude, stop." But then the other part of me thought, I'm not this kid's dad. I told him to stop twice and he didn't listen. Whatever happens is his problem. He ended up getting fired. Yeah, a lady came in and said, let me talk to your manager. And I said, I can give you her phone number. And boom, he got fired. I know I'm the one who brought in the laser pointer, but I don't really blame myself for him losing his job. That was a stupid thing for you to do, kid. Once again, I was the good employee. I mean, I didn't show that much initiative that time, though. So before I worked at Subway, I liked to go to this taco place and get the same thing every time, the carne asada fries. Later, I learned that the carne asada fries are 2,000 calories. That was the only thing I ever got at this taco place. And I used to be super self-conscious, thinking, man, these employees must think I'm so weird coming in getting the same thing over and over. But then when I worked at Subway, I learned, ha! Nope, fast food employees don't care about you or your order. Unless you're mean to them or tell them that you're going to your dad's funeral, fast food employees will not remember you. One time someone came in and told me, I'll have the usual. And I said, I've literally never seen you before in my entire life. I didn't really say that. If any of you are working at a really slow Subway, here are some fun games for you to play. Cut up a loaf of bread into small pieces and make a mini sandwich with one meat and three different vegetables. Give it to your coworker and have them eat it without looking. Then they have to guess what's on the sandwich. And that's it. You can set up a point system, like they get 1 point for every ingredient they get right. Also, you can do the same game by mixing up two sodas and have them guess. You can walk into the freezer and see how long you can last. My record's an hour. You could bring in some vanilla ice cream and just make all sorts of stuff with that. You can make root beer floats. You could take two cookies and put ice cream between them and make a cookie ice cream sandwich. 16-year-old girl made this thing. I think it was called the Kazuki. You put cookie dough in a bowl and then you cooked it, but not all the way. And then you put ice cream on top of it and it was super good. You can make nachos and bread bowls, and we wasted a lot of food. I still don't know why that guy didn't give me a turkey Italiano. I mean, at my Subway, we made bread bowls and nachos. I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say that you, yes, you watching this right now, are an introvert. How do I know this? Because you're watching YouTube videos instead of being outside.
What are you doing on the computer? Go outside, so beautiful!
Don't worry, I'm an introvert too. I got an email from an 8-year-old once. He said he liked my videos. It was one of the worst emails I ever got. So I'm just going to briefly explain what introvert means to all the 8-year-olds watching this. Hey, kids! Are you ready to learn? An introvert is a person who doesn't really like to play with other kids. This doesn't make them sad that they're lonely. They just would rather play by themselves. Think of it this way. Has your friend ever asked you to play with them, but you didn't really want to, so you asked your mom to make up a reason for you not to go? If so, then you're probably an introvert. Or you just need better friends. Me and my mom had a code word, so if a friend was on the phone who wanted to hang out, I would say, let me ask my mom. And when I asked her, if I said the code word, it meant, Mom, make up an excuse so I can't go. I'm not gonna say the code word because I still plan on using it. I actually made a comic kinda similar to this back in 2014, and it's one of my most popular comics, so thanks for liking it. Obviously, it would be one of my most popular comics. I mean, look how great it is. Michael, the creator of Vsauce, hey Vsauce, Michael here, has this new YouTube Red show called Minefield. And as of right now, it's the best YouTube Red series. And in the first episode, Michael goes into an isolation room for 3 days. He has no technology, he's all by himself for 3 days. When I first saw this, I thought, hey, maybe I should try that. Yeah, 3 days of nothing but your own thoughts. I can think of comic ideas, I can write a book, and I don't even have to write any of these ideas down because everything I say is being recorded. This could be my next vacation. Also, speaking of YouTube Red, hey Susan, I heard you had a new spot open for a Red series. I have this great idea called YouTuber Swap. It's like Wife Swap, but with YouTubers. Just hit me up if you're interested. Now, don't get the wrong idea that I'm someone who hates people. I don't. It's just, if we're strangers, then I'd rather not talk to you. Unless you're a stranger who's a fan of my videos. Okay, we can talk about me all day. Bringing up a point from the last video, don't be afraid to talk to me. You know, every YouTuber is in a weird position with their fans, because if you meet me, you already have a pretty good idea of who I am as a person. For instance, you know how long I wet the bed. But for me, I have no clue how long you wet the bed. So, what are we talking about? I'm okay with having a conversation with people, okay? It's just that I'm never the one who starts the conversation. But again, this doesn't apply to fans. I like to think that I'm decent with conversation, but I don't really know how good I am at it. I did fail public speaking. But on occasion, there are times when it's awkward not to talk to a stranger. One time in my college years, I got on an elevator to go to a class, and another person got on with me. I live a pretty crazy life, I know. And I did what anyone should do in that situation. I didn't say anything to the other person. But then when we got on our floor, you know how the elevator doors are supposed to open? Well, this time, it didn't. The doors didn't open. This is an introvert's worst nightmare, by the way. And it wasn't one of those elevators that you could fit a king-size bed into. This elevator was about the size of a red box. Is the door gonna open? Seems like it should open by now. What do you do in that situation? You can't not talk to the person you're now trapped with.
So, what class are you going to? Physics?
Oh, that makes sense, because this is a science building. Enough time had passed where we started looking up the school's number to tell them that we were stuck, which is what you're supposed to do, right? There's not, like, a button on the elevator that you can press to call for help, right? But luckily, while we were doing that, for whatever reason, after a solid 2 minutes, the door decided to open. And just the wave of relief that went over me and this kid. Oh, I thought we'd be in there for hours!
I hope I never see you again.
Same. And that's why I'm never going in an elevator again. It's too risky. I think the problem I have is that I'm bad at starting conversations. Normally, if I'm talking to someone who I don't know, I'll ask, "So, how was your day?" But if your day was anything but good, I don't want to hear it. My dog died. Yeah, they do that. Why is starting a conversation so hard? I only know, like, 3 good conversation starters. The first one is, "How was your day?" And if that doesn't work, I start talking about all this crazy weather we're having. And in Arizona, there's really only one weather. Hot. Although it did rain like 2 weeks ago. And lastly, if I have nothing else to ask, I hit them with a really hard question. What color's your toothbrush? Mine's red. To start a conversation, sometimes people will ask, what's your favorite blank? I have nothing against these types of questions. I think it tells you a lot about the person you're talking to, but there's one form of this question that I really hate. And it's the question, what's your favorite candy bar? And I hate this question because my favorite candy bar, and I will stick by my answer no matter what you think, is M&M's.
It's not a candy bar.
Ow! What an astute observation! I'm a very simple man, alright? I like my chocolate pure. Sometimes when people ask this, I think, oh, I should just say Twix. People won't get mad if I say Twix. But then I remember, screw Twix, I like M&M's. But James, why don't you just say Hershey's bar? Because Hershey's makes a mess on your hands and they don't come in a convenient bite-sized pieces, while M&M's hard outer shell improves their overall texture. Why am I even having this argument? I had a friend tell me, well, James, I really like Smarties, but I know they're not a bar, so I don't say they're my favorite candy bar. First of all, dude, Smarties? Really? That's your favorite candy? And second of all, the person asking the question honestly doesn't care what my answer is. Why are you asking such a specific question? You're excluding so much other candy. Candy bars are exclusively chocolate. What if my favorite candy isn't chocolate? What if it's Smarties? Whoa, did you guys see what I just did there? I was talking about M&Ms for like a whole minute. I was having a conversation. All because I was arguing why M&Ms are my favorite candy bar. So that's it. That's how you talk to people. You disagree with everything they say and then argue about it. So everyone watching, argue about your favorite candy bar down in the comments.
Hey kids, do you want some candy?
Yeah!
No kids, never accept candy from strangers. Don't you know candy can cause cavities? Next time a stranger offers you candy, just think about all the cavities you'd get.
This message brought to you by the Dentists of America Association.
You've all heard the phrase, stranger danger, right? Probably a parent slash guardian taught you that you should never trust strangers. And that's really solid advice because you're just a dumb kid who doesn't know what a pedophile is. But all those parent slash guardians grew up without the internet. And, the internet is full of strangers. And I'm one of them. How much do you really know about me?
I'm a math education major. I want to be a math teacher.
Is that I used to have a speech impediment when I was little.
Think it was the Halloween after the bunny?
And that's why I'm a furry.
I, James, was a bedwetter until I was 8 years old.
Okay, granted, you do know quite a few personal details. The internet changes how we talk to people. Meaning it's a lot easier to talk to strangers on the internet than in real life. Because on the internet, you can find strangers who have the same interests, hobbies, and fetishes as you do. But I find it so hard to talk to new people. I would never have enough confidence to be a door-to-door salesman. There are some jobs where you have to deal with annoying customers, but being a door-to-door salesman, you're the annoying one. I guess I just hate bothering people. I'd be a terrible salesman.
What?
Do you have a water filter?
Yeah.
But I was just thinking that I could use another one.
Oh, then you probably don't need this. I'm sorry for wasting your time.
One time I actually did have to be a door-to-door salesman for a Boy Scout activity. But I wasn't even selling anything. I was just telling people about a canned food drive the Scouts were doing. As a troop, it was our job to go door-to-door and ask people if there was any non-perishable food that they were willing to donate. Being a nervous little kid probably benefited me, because most people were super nice, and a lot of people donated stuff. And even the people who didn't donate were like, oh, sorry, I don't have anything on me.
You don't have any canned foods?
Well, dude, that's perfect. The house next door just gave me some. Here, these are for you. But there were two houses I went to that I still remember to this day. One guy pointed to his no soliciting sign and asked me if I knew what it said. Yeah, I know what soliciting is. I'd always thought that soliciting meant I couldn't sell you something, not that I couldn't ask you for free food. And at the other house, all the guy said was, "Listen, I'm not interested." And then both houses slammed the door in my face. Some of you are probably thinking, that's it? That was nothing. And yeah, looking back at the situation, I got off pretty easily. People who are a full-time door-to-door salesman probably have to deal with way worse stuff every day. But to a fragile-minded kid who was just doing what his scoutmaster told him to do, those experiences scarred me. Luckily, I'm not a salesman, so I'm usually the person on the other side of the door. I never know what to say to these people. For the longest time, I used to tell them the exact same thing. My mom's not home. But one day, that's not going to work. So for now, I just have to pretend that I'm interested, tell them I'll give them a call, and then put their pamphlet into the pile. My grandma, however, would, treat these door-to-door salesmen very differently. You see, my grandma is known as the nicest person on the planet, so she would invite these salesmen inside, offer them a glass of water, and then show them pictures of her grandkids. I'm not exaggerating. One time I was at my grandma's house just playing some video games, and this person, an adult person I'd never seen before, just started watching me play. "Are you one of my cousins?" And then my grandma handed him a big cup of water filled with ice and a straw. They talked for a bit. He left, and I asked, "Gram-Gram, who was that?"
"Oh, it was someone just trying to sell me a vacuum cleaner."
But salesmen don't have it the hardest on the doorstep. There's also Jehovah Witnesses and Mormon missionaries who are literally trying to save your soul. I can't even get mad at these people because if you had the secret to eternal happiness, wouldn't you be telling everyone in your neighborhood too? They're trying to do good and all, but whenever they show up, "Hello, do you have time for... to be baptized?" "Oh, sorry guys, but you're wasting your time. You see, I'm an YouTuber, so I'm not going to heaven." Here's a story that's a prime example of me failing at talking to people. I had just finished grocery shopping at Walmart, and this isn't important to the story, but Adam from Something Else YT was there.
"Hello. Walmart's where I make friends."
I was walking to my car, and I started eating an Uncrustable frozen PB&J sandwich that I bought, and this guy drives up to me and yells, "Man, you're not even waiting to get in the car. You're just eating that thing up."
"Yeah, I was hungry."
Then he pulls his car over and says, "All right, listen, fellas, I'm traveling to Buckeye and I need $8 for gas, but I forgot my wallet at home." And I thought, huh, that's coincidentally how much a pack of cigarettes costs. He offered us his CDs in exchange for $8, but Adam said the smart thing.
Sorry, man, I don't got any cash on me.
And he showed the man his empty wallet. Poor. "All I have is a 10.
"You stupid mother...
I don't know why I said that. I think I was actually going to pay this man $8 if I had exact change. But here's the thing. I didn't only have a 10. I also had a 20. The guy saw my cash and said, "Man, all you have is a 10. Nah, man, I see you have a 20. And then he raised the price of his CDs from $8 to $30. Like I said, I should have handled the situation differently. If I was going to give him money, I should have given him a 10 and said, "Now give me $2 back." But he had a solid argument. He said, "If there were 20 dudes who all tried to jump you, I'd have your back." Now that's not a bad price for a Walmart parking lot bodyguard. You know, man, you gotta realize that money is just an object. "Okay, then why do you want it?" He asked us, "Do you boys like rap music?" He does.
"Hey, I do. I listen to like Eminem, Kendrick Lamar, and Chance the Rap." Oh no.
And then the man pulled out his CDs, but he didn't have a CD player in his car, so he asked me if I could use my CD player, and I said, sure, but my CD player already had my mixtape in that I never bothered to take out, so when I turned on my CD player, oh, I got something in my throat. By the way, if you want to listen to my whole mixtape, link in the description. Adam and I started listening to his CDs, and the man started doing this. "Yeah, that's the good stuff. So what'll it be, little man? You gonna give me the money or nah, huh? Huh? Do I need to get my gang of 19 other dudes out? Huh?"
So. Now $30?
No, I just gave my last 30 away.
I can make a video about this.
Yeah, I ended up giving the guy my $30. Honestly, I didn't get the meth head drug user vibe from him. He was more of a goofy dad who just needed $30. And after I gave him the money, he thanked us, saying things like, God bless you, and talked about how much he was going to miss his CD. But turn the music down, I miss it already. Now, was I scammed out of $30 and secretly this guy is laughing to himself that he sold a used rap CD to a white boy? Yeah, that definitely could be a possibility, but I hope whoever this guy is, that he pays the good deed forward. And I hope you made it to wherever you need to be. In conclusion, never carry cash on your kids.
I hate you!
Oh! Well, next time, don't steal my Monopoly!
Ariana, give James your $200 you landed on his property.
No! He's in jail! I'm not gonna give money to a criminal! That's not how you... Pie!
Mommy, why is brother screaming?
Shut the f*** up, Sally. You don't get to talk after stealing my last railroad. I wish I was never born! Me too! You think I wanted this?
Hi. What you all just witnessed is the phenomenon known as Family Game Night. Family Game Night plays an important role in the household dynamic, as studies have shown that families who participate in activities together form closer bonds and stronger relationships with each other. So try setting aside some time to play board games with your family. And if they beat you, cut them out of your life forever. Okay, have fun, you guys.
I like board games. I guess any game that doesn't involve me getting up and moving around, I'm a huge fan of. Also, since I'm bad at everything and don't like playing games against someone who's better than me, I really love the games that don't require any type of skill, like the game Chutes and Ladders, which I just learned today has another name called Snakes and Ladders. And I'm going to call it that instead, because I'd rather draw snakes than chutes. In Snakes and Ladders, you have no free will. You're at the mercy of a single dice, and I love it. While I was looking up walkthroughs for Snakes and Ladders, I quickly learned that this game was made for preschoolers, which is probably why it's so simple. Or how about the game Sorry, which is the most unapologetic game I've ever played. There's some strategy in that game, but most of the time you're just getting revenge on the players who've wronged you. And the creators of Sorry knew this because the tagline of the game is Sorry, the game of sweet revenge. Which, if you think about it, is a pretty funny oxymoron. Aha! Take this! Sorry. I know how to play chess, but like most things, I'm not very good at it. Unless I'm playing against someone under the age of 4, I don't want to play that game. Because it shows everyone how bad I am at planning ahead. That's a game that's 100% strategy-based. It's like the IQ test of board games. Beating someone in chess will put you more ahead academically than anyone with a Harvard degree. And you'll get more babes. However, there is one exception, and that is, it's okay to lose at chess if you're playing against a computer, even if it's on easy mode. Computers are way better at planning ahead than anyone, because I don't know how, but a human made a computer that can beat the world's best chess player, but the creator of the computer can't beat the world's best chess player. So I guess that means it's game over. We tried our best, but we've peaked. Whenever you beat a computer in chess, it was going easy on you. Imagine if we made a computer that could beat the world's best Snakes and Ladders player. I would pay money to see a Snakes and Ladders championship. And everyone watching knows that the person playing is just some Joe Schmo that acts like the world's best Snakes and Ladders player, but they're all still excited. And there's real snakes that you get to slide down? That would be amazing! Sign me up. While we're on the topic of chess, I want to tell you about this cool sport I discovered called chess boxing. This is an actual competitive sport where two players play chess for 3 minutes, then box each other for 3 minutes. And they keep switching between chess and boxing until someone either gets a checkmate, they run out of time playing chess, or they KO the other player. I love this sport because it combines two polar opposite games, and it's something that anyone can play. Brains over brawn? Try saying that after I sucker punch you in the... Oh, that was a good move. I'm gonna punch you so hard in the balls for that. I know I just said I was bad at chess, but if there's any YouTubers who want to challenge me to a chess boxing match, I will gladly take you to the ring, and we can charge people $12 just to watch. And we can end it in a draw, you know, so that way you won't look bad in front of your fans. So Battleship, that's another board game, and it also got a big Hollywood movie based off of it. I haven't seen it, but I hope there's a scene where the captain of the ship goes, "Men, fire at D6? And then there's an explosion in the distance, and then Rihanna, who is actually in that movie, says, "Sir, the alien sent a message. It says, miss." And the captain goes, "Hmm. Someone write that down so we don't forget." And then there'd be an explosion at the back of their ship, and alarms start going off, and everyone on board starts freaking out except for the captain. He goes, "Rihanna, send the aliens a message. Tell them, hit." Also, ask them if they think the situation would make a good board game. And if that scene is not in the movie, I hate it. Did anyone else collect a bunch of Pokemon cards but never knew how to play the game? I don't think I met a single person who actually knew how to play the card game. Which was weird, because in my school, the card game was just as popular as the video games. Kids would always show off their collection of cards and binders, and everyone always wanted the highly coveted shiny Charizard card. You know which one I'm talking about. You know which one I'm talking about. You know which one I'm talking about! Unlike Yu-Gi-Oh!, which had dedicated episodes explaining why these five pieces of cardboard were expensive, the shiny Charizard was rare, not because it was good in the game, but because everyone agreed that it looked cool. But then when you ask someone, "Hey, do you want to play a game?" they would say, "Okay, I summon my Charizard in attack mode." Does anyone even know how to play the Pokemon card game? I bet none of these guys even know what they're doing. How'd this guy win? He didn't even call Uno. I can't be too hard on the Pokemon cards, because the card game I like is probably way more complicated than Pokemon. I don't know for sure, because, like I said, I don't know how to play the Pokemon card game, but my favorite card game is Neopets. I'm just kidding, that was a joke. Kind of. I did actually own a lot of Neopet cards. I don't remember exactly how to play. I do remember you have to get 21 points to win, which got me into playing blackjack. But it's okay that I don't remember how to play, because no one else is playing this game. I wanted to find some footage of a Neopet TGC championship, only to come to the disappointing realization that no Neopet championship exists, which is sad. So if there's any YouTubers watching who want to fight my Scorchio, square up. Okay, but for real, the card game I like the most is Magic the Gathering. And fun little factoid, all three card games I've mentioned were created by the same company, Wizards of the Coast. Hey, is that a Monopoly reference? I've been playing Magic since 2007, and back then the game was a lot more simple. Look at some of these more recent cards. First, see how many words are on them? And if we flip them over, they merge into an even bigger card. What? If you showed these cards to my 11-year-old self, I would have lost my marbles. My favorite thing about Magic is when Dick Garfield, was first creating the game in 1993, he didn't really have an accurate way of testing the cards to make sure they're all fair and balanced, and he ended up creating some of the most overpowered cards in Magic. And players today refer to these cards as the Power 9, because there were 9 really good ones, which is why every single one of them is banned. Now, don't get me wrong, the Power 9 are good cards, but none of them are like, you win the game good. Take this one for example, Ancestral Recall. All it says is, draw 3 cards, or force opponent to draw 3 cards. Which is stupid that they added that last part. Why would you ever give your opponent 3 more cards to beat you with? Now, I know what you're thinking. Wait, a slightly better Pot of Greed, which is a card that allows me to draw 2 new cards from my deck and place them into my hand, is one of the top 9 most powerful Magic cards? Yeah, Pot of Greed is banned too. Games play such an important role in childhood, and here's what they all teach us. In Magic, if you're really good at what you do, no one will invite you to their tournament. Monopoly, white-collar crime is okay. Battleship, just guess and check. Snakes and ladders, if you see a ladder, climb it immediately. And no one cares about Neopets. Now, if you excuse me, I have to show this prison guard my coupon I have that lets me get out of jail anytime I like. Let's pretend you get on a bus and it's super crowded. The only spot that's open is between 2 strangers. So you sit down between 2 people you never met and everyone is fine. Everyone's keeping to themselves, no one's making eye contact, it's perfect. Sure, your shoulders are touching, but that's just what happens. That's part of the bus-going experience, you poor person. But then, at the very next stop, aisle seat guy gets off. So now you and window seat guy are sitting right next to each other. But since you're in the middle, you have to be the one to decide, do you move or not? I honestly don't know what the right thing to do in that situation is. I'm conflicted. Because if you move, it would be silently telling the other person, hey, you're disgusting. I can't stand having our shoulders touch any longer, and I'm glad to finally get away from you. Ugh. But on the other hand, if I was the window seat guy, I would want the middle seat guy to become the new aisle seat guy. I wouldn't see moving as rude. I would just want his gross, disgusting body as far away from me as possible. That's not rude. But on the other hand, maybe I'm overthinking everything, and most people don't even mind being this close to another human, and they aren't struggling socially, I don't know. Now imagine that same situation, but with urinals. If you're in the middle urinal, do you move halfway through to the other urinal? Because I would.
Are you supposed to talk to people when you're sitting 2 inches away from them? I always felt like I should say something, like, hey, did you see the game last night? I didn't. I was too busy drawing cartoons. But I realize that this is a two-way street. I'm worried about not talking to someone, but they're not talking to me either. We both agreed that there's this unwritten contract between us that we're not even going to look at each other. It got me thinking about strangers and specifically how I treat them. And how I could make money off of them. Hey-o! I'm just kidding. That was a joke. For most of my life, I would go out of my way to avoid talking to people. I would stay in my lane, mind my own business, no eye contact. If everyone's using a urinal, I'd have to pee tomorrow. Yes, I'm lonely. But now that YouTube's the thing, I'm interacting with strangers more often than I've had to in my entire life. So I've been thinking a lot about strangers. And first of all, I think the word stranger is already an insulting label for someone just because you don't know their name. Oh, I don't know this person? They're a stranger. They're strange. I'm the normal one. They're the freaks. They probably murder people with an axe. That's always the go-to profession of a stranger, an axe murderer. But the people you see throughout your day are all humans with their own hopes and dreams, and some of them may hope to kill you, but you'll never know because you didn't ever take the time to get to know them. So I think that the people you see throughout your daily life aren't strangers. They're potential friends. Except for the weird ones, obviously. Stay away from them. And yes, I'm telling you to judge people based on their appearance. They're the ones that chose to wear anime shirts in public, okay? So back to the bus scenario. I'm sitting right next to this fellow human being. So far, there's not a single reason why I should dislike this person. But I don't know why, if you put him and me on a bus next to each other, I want him as far away from me as possible. Just stop touching my shoulder! So that was the last time I took the bus. Unfortunately, that's not the only place you meet strangers. One time I was at Home Depot, and I was looking for jumper cables, and I couldn't find them anywhere. And I don't know if I'm the only human that's like this, but I will try everything in my power to not talk to a sales associate. I guess it's because I know they get paid minimum wage, and their life sucks, and I just want to leave them alone and not make their job any harder than it has to be. But asking employees for help isn't even bothering them that much. In fact, I think it's part of their job? Like, what's the worst thing they're gonna say? Ugh! You don't know where one specific item is? Everyone else knows. Did you even look? They're in the jumper cable aisle, idiot. No one's gonna think that. So feeling desperate, I mustered up what little courage I had and swaggered up to someone wearing an orange vest and said, excuse me, do you know where the jumper cables are? I don't work here. Oh, you don't work here? And then he walked away. And then he waddled away, waddle, waddle. And then the very next day, bum, bum, bum. So I think the logical thing to do in that situation would have been to find someone who does work there. But I left the store because I didn't want to run into that same guy again. But I also bought a hammer because I didn't want people to think that I stole something. So... Oh, yeah. And by the way, if you wear an orange vest to Home Depot, just expect people to ask you for help. Same goes for people who wear red shirts at Target. You'd think I'd learn from my mistakes, but no, I have a bunch more examples. When my book came out, my publisher said that it was going to be carried at Barnes & Noble, and I thought that was super duper cool and wanted to see my book in the wild. Not to buy or anything, just to have a look at. So I took my friend Adam from Something Else YT, and we went to the local Barnes & Noble and started our search. We looked in the humor section, didn't find it. Then we checked the new release section, it wasn't there either. Then we looked at the best-selling section, then the religious section, but we couldn't find the book anywhere. So either the publisher lied, or they had already sold out. But just to be sure, I asked one of the workers, hey, do you guys have a book by The Odd Ones Out? He kind of looks like this. And the worker typed something out on his computer and said, oh yeah, we got those in the back. We just haven't put them out yet. So then he went to the back room, brought out a copy, and handed it to me saying, here you go, kid. And I thought, well, frick. I can't just hand it back to the guy and say, oh no, that's okay. I didn't want to buy it. I just wanted to have a look at it. Do you know how inconvenient that would be? So the only less awkward option I could think of was to buy my own book. And you know what? I'd get a couple cents back from this purchase, so it wouldn't have been a total loss. But Adam, being the more sensible one, said,
dude, this is ridiculous. You have to come clean.
So then he went to the worker and said,
so he actually wrote this book? He just wanted to get a look at it, like, in the wild.
And the worker said, oh, that's so cool. Do you want to sign our copies? And then I thought, well, hold on. You're not even going to ask me for my ID? How do you know I actually wrote this book and I'm not some guy trying to deface someone else's? And then the guy gave me a whole stack of my books, and I signed them all. Last story before I go. I was in the hallway of a building, and me and this potential friend crossed paths. He said, hello, and I was going to respond with, hello, and how's it going? But I combined the two and ended up saying, how? And then I jumped out a window and fell to my death. I can't rationalize that behavior. Maybe I spend too much time on the computer and I'm not used to looking at real people's faces, but I'm trying to change. Don't get me wrong, going to conventions and meeting fans has helped me a lot with talking to people. Granted, those conversations are usually one-sided and a real stranger won't already know who I am, but they've still helped me. Now, you might be expecting me to give you advice on overcoming social anxiety, but if you watch this video, you know I'm not the most qualified to give that advice, but I'll try my best. I know it's hard to feel confident, and I'm still working on it, but you have to understand that we're all people, and we all have things that we're struggling with. And in reality, we're not all watching or caring about every little thing that other people do. We're all too busy worrying about what other people think of us. So with enough practice and believing in yourself, you can show the world your true colors, and I think you'll find that people are a lot nicer than you think. So if you're the middle seat guy on the bus, and you have to decide whether or not to move, do whatever you want. No one cares. Just stop touching my shoulders.
First.
Who else is watching this in current year?
I'm first. No, I'm first.
Everyone needs to know I was the first person to leave a comment on this YouTube video. Please. I don't have a lot going on right now.
Fellas, I'm just gonna go ahead and say what we're all thinking here. This video is a forgery. And also a homosexual.
Hey! Why are we spending our finite time spreading negativity and arguing with strangers whose minds will never change? Are we really that bitter we have to bring others down? These comments are pointless because everyone knows I'm first. Comment sections, in some form or another, have been around since the internet's conception, and I don't see them ever going away. So in like 200 years, historians are going to be studying ancient comments to see what life was like back then. Right underneath this video, and any other video ever posted, is an open forum for anyone who watched the video to leave their semi-unfiltered, anonymous opinions. And nothing bad has ever come from it. Wait, are you scrolling down to read the comments while the video is playing? You haven't even finished the video and you're reading the comments? I'm sorry, did I bore you? Are you bored? No, that's fine. Don't mind me. It's not like we were in the middle of a one-sided conversation or anything. Also, if you see any spam bots, can you report them for me? They're a real problem. Like most people, I will watch a video and then not add anything to the conversation and go about my day, watching more videos. And I know the vast majority of you do this too, because let's math something out. If we look at my last video and take the total amount of comments and divide it by views, we only get 0.4% of people who watch the video leave a comment. That's not a whole lot. Oh, I know. What if we look at a YouTuber apology video? I'm sure there's a bunch of people leaving comments, you know, letting people know their thoughts and having a civil discussion. Huh. Only 0.3% of people who watched the video left a comment. Every video I did the math on only ever had a 0.5% view-to-comment ratio. So if only 0.5% of people are leaving comments, why am I talking about them? Because while most of us aren't comment leavers, I know the majority of us are comment readers. This video and the comment section are digital neighbors. You literally don't have to travel far to read comments. They're right there. Sorry if you're watching this on a TV, by the way. They are there, trust me. And I can prove most people are comment readers because a lot of times a single comment will get more thumbs up than there are total comments on a video. Which, of course they do, because who's going to take the time to write out a whole comment when they could just thumbs up the ones they agree with? The relationship between YouTuber and comment section is a little complicated. For one, it's the only time I get to kind of have a conversation with 0.4% of you. If you feel so inclined, you can type out a response to this video, give me feedback, tell a joke, or post a timestamp of a part you liked. And there's a 99% chance I'll never see that. But if I do, and I like what you said enough, I can give your comment a little heart badge. Yeah, I perceive this guy. Although, there are some challenges with comment sections that are not exclusively YouTuber problems. Even in the early days of the internet, comment sections have had a reputation of being toxic and argumentative. I will say I have noticed that comment sections are not as toxic as they were in the 2010s. Maybe websites have just gotten better at moderating, but I've noticed an overall decrease in the amount of slurs and KYSs compared to when I was 13, so good job, comment section. You're growing up. I think there are three reasons why comment sections can be very toxic. Number one, people are more likely to speak out when they disagree with something rather than agree with it. If you come across the comment, "I like cats," you're not going to go out of your way to comment, "I agree with your opinion, cats are lovely." You might give the comment a thumbs up, but otherwise you're just going to keep scrolling. But if you're someone who only likes dogs and you have too much free time, now you're getting all worked up seeing a different opinion than yours, so you're going to comment, "This is really insensitive to dogs. You know, my dog could beat up your cat." So every comment section will eventually devolve into a cesspool full of people who disagree with each other. But the toxicity is only magnified because of reason number two, people are anonymous. When you don't have to face real-world repercussions for all the reprehensible sh** you say, there's no limit to the things you won't spout out. Although, there is something to be said about never being truly anonymous online. Maybe in the pre-Facebook era, you could get away with saying some messed up stuff. But now, if you upset the wrong person, they'll post your IP address. So, for example, this guy commented, "And now, I'm outside his mother's home. First!" And what makes it worse is you don't know if the comment you're reading is from an adult or a 13-year-old. And yes, that matters, because 13-year-olds aren't people. And the third reason why comment sections are so toxic? Sometimes people just want to make you angry. You know, they rustle your jimmies. They do a little trolling. I'm not saying all negative comments are trolls. You can have your genuine criticisms, but we've all seen comments that are just trying to stir the pot, you know? It doesn't matter how thought out or correct your response to a troll comment is. As soon as you respond, you've stooped down to their level and lost. And the number four reason that I just thought of is because I think people can forget that behind these comments and profile pictures is a real person with emotions. Ian Hecox from Smosh made an analogy I really liked, that reading negative comments is like boxing. When you read a negative comment, it's like getting punched in the face. But with training, you can build your stamina to learn techniques and blocks to reduce the damage a punch would do to you. But at the end of the day, you're still boxing, and there's only so many punches to the face you can take before you have to tap out. I can read 100 positive comments and one negative one, and it's the negative comment that'll stick in my brain. I would be lying if I said I never got hurt by a comment. And I know I'm not the only one who feels this way, because there's a word for it. In psychology, there's things called cognitive distortions, which are times when our brain thinks in unhealthy ways, like catastrophizing, overgeneralization, or depersonalization. And one of these distortions is called selective abstraction, which is when we focus on one detail taken out of context and ignore all the other, more important details. And it's not exclusive to reading comments either. It's the same thing when you're hanging out with friends and you make one awkward joke and you focus on that for the rest of the night and ignore all the other good interactions you had. So how do we stop this flawed way of thinking? I'm asking you. I don't know. Leave a comment. Sometimes we're able to laugh off mean comments, but I think everyone has at least one comment that got to them. For me, it's always the comments about things I'm insecure about, or the comments saying things about me that are objectively wrong. Unfortunately, the only solution to deal with toxic comments is to just ignore them. Don't even let them take up space in your brain. If you're going to put yourself on the internet, expect to see the good and the very, very bad. You're not going to please everyone, and you don't need everyone's approval. So thank you, 0.5% of people who leave positive comments on internet videos. Us lurkers might not get involved in the conversation, but we sure do love watching the conversation happen from the sidelines. And now that you've watched this YouTube video, let's go see what other people who've watched this YouTube video are talking about. Who's this Bob guy?
G'day everyone, it's me, James. Thank you so much for watching a video about the comment section. I'm really looking forward to reading the comments on this video. Have any of you ever left a comment on a YouTube video? Let me know in the comment box down below. Also, I'm excited to announce that the graphic novel for Oddballs has been released. You can get yourself a copy at Target, Walmart, or my website. Once again, I have to give a big thanks to my amazing team who did such an incredible job, especially David Toons. He's just like super, super talented. And with that, all I have to say is wear your seatbelts, mates.
May I have your attention, please? Your attention. Please, mate. May I have some? Please. What if I put up gameplay of Subway Surfer and used a robot voice? Would that keep you stimulated?
Wikipedia says that people born between the year 1981 and 1996 are part of a group called Millennials. And I am a 96 baby. Hello, Year of the Rat, what's up? I'm cusping on that millennial Gen Z line, so I can relate to all you Gen Zers, okay? I know what cap means, I know what drip means, and I also don't remember where I was when 9/11 happened. However, Gen Z, there is a difference between us. We're both a generation that grew up on the internet, but you grew up with the internet. We grew up with the internet. The internet didn't used to always look like this. It has metamorphosized a multitude of times. Now, if you talk to an older millennial, they'll tell you the horror stories of the late 90s internet. How the internet used to be paired with your home's landline. And if you don't know what a landline is, good. If you wanted to surf the net at blazing speeds of 7 kilobytes a second, then you couldn't use your telephone at the same time. This was before texting even existed, so if you needed to talk to someone, you had to call them and look up their phone number in that 20-pound weapon known as a phone book, and then if someone else was using the internet, they'd get the pleasure of listening to... Although, if I had to make a sound that represented the entire internet, it would sound exactly like this. I didn't grow up with dial-up, but I did grow up in a time where the internet looked completely different. By the time I was exploring the interwebs, we got speeds up to 1 megabyte per second. So the highest quality video you could stream on YouTube was in 240p, or this big. And it would still buffer. A lot. Gen Z, you weren't there when YouTube had a 5-star scoring system and the subscribe button was yellow and people would put these things all over their videos. You weren't there when the videos were in a 4:3 aspect ratio because that's what TVs looked like. You weren't there when a background for a website would be a never-ending grid of a JPEG and music would play against your will and your cursor would turn into a sparkly wand and... Okay, that's actually pretty cool. Whatever happened to that? And then the person who built the website would go, it's looking pretty good, but you know what this web page really needs? A counter that'll tell you the total number of people who visited. Let me just copy this HTML code I found online. And if you're around my age and you also had unsupervised computer time, then great, you were also there to experience the pre-puberty years of the internet. Try to imagine the internet without social media. No Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or MySpace. Were people back then just not talking about themselves or sharing their opinions online? Were we as a society more connected with the people we knew in the real world? No, of course not. People have been sharing their opinions online since day one. They were just doing it on random message boards. I know it sounds trivial nowadays, but there was once a novelty in being able to type anything you wanted into the computer and then someone else you didn't know would instantaneously respond. Even Neopets, a game targeted to children, had chat rooms and let anyone send unfiltered messages to children. I'm surprised I didn't meet any weirdos. That's one thing that'll never change with the internet. There will always be weirdos online. In fact, most of a weirdo's life is spent behind a computer. I would know. I think people loved sending messages so much that sometimes your friend would send you a message that said,
"You've just been hit by the duck truck. Send this message to 8 of your friends and you'll be as sexy as a truck."
Ignore and you'll be hit by a 16-wheeler. You have 7 days.
And instead of blocking that person, some people would keep the chain going.
Hey, I have a quick question. When was the last time you ever had to type a specific website into your address bar? Probably somewhere about 10 years, give or take. You just type in a Y, and then YouTube pops up. You put in a T, you get Twitter, and P gets you picturesofalligators.com. And if you had a specific question you wanted to ask the internet, you just Yahoo it, right? Yahoo? Oh, no, that's not the one you kids are using. You kids are using that new search engine, right? Ask Jeeves? I know there's like four main websites that everyone goes on, but back then, instead of having a social media account, people made their own websites. So there were a bunch of different websites for you to explore. And to help you find those websites, you had a few search engines to pick from. Everyone loves to dunk on Bing for even attempting to be a search engine, but back in the day, Google had some competition. Obviously, I can see why Google ultimately won the search engine battle. Google is a great company, and I would recommend Google to all my peers and coworkers. I love Google! As much as I love the internet, some of the best memories we had on the computer weren't even on the internet, were they? Sometimes the internet would just go down. But did that stop us? Did we go outside? No. We were still able to supply ourselves with hours of entertainment even without an internet. All you had to do was click Start, All Programs, Accessories, Games, and then... Space Cadet Pinball. I guarantee every millennial watching this right now just got hit with a big wave of nostalgia. This game might seem simple because there's only two buttons that you can press, but when you really got into it, this game had a whole lot more going on. Trust me, Space Cadet Pinball was all we had sometimes, and I cherished every second of it. But if you were anything like me growing up, you were also practicing your art skills. And luckily, every computer came pre-installed with a top-of-the-line painting software that every artist needs. Yeah, this program's got everything. There's a line tool, and a bucket tool, and a circle tool. And sometimes when I was really bored, I would make a black rectangle, scribble the freeform selection tool on it, and then blammo! Yeah, I still got it. I just made a masterpiece. And, fun James bonus tip, for some extra self-induced epilepsy, hold down Control-I, which will invert the colors, so your masterpiece will go... Ah, oh my god! Oh, it hurts to look at!
Hey, looks like you're trying to create a conclusion to this YouTube video. Would you like my help?
No, Clippy. Even when you were around, I never used you. I just liked having you there to keep me company. The internet is still a relatively new invention that is ever changing the way we live. And we have yet to see the full effects of what being connected since birth does to a person. The fact that the accumulation of all human knowledge can now fit in your pocket? That's going to affect your day-to-day life! Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you to get off the internet, touch grass, and live your life to the fullest. Otherwise, I'd be a hypocrite. And unemployed. There's no denying all the positive things that the internet has to offer. But I'm also not going to deny all the negative things that come with instant gratification, too. As technology advances, so too do we advance the amount of time we spend online. The internet can connect us to a million different people and perspectives that we never would have been exposed to before. But it can also expose us to some really nasty people and perspectives. And the only thing we can do about those people is shrug and say... Sorry, that's the internet. So, are we, as a society, better off with the internet? I think so. But just, I don't know, just remember to drink water and stretch. Alright, that's the lesson of this video. Go stretch. I'm serious, right now, go touch your toes.
James, you said you were going to make a teacher's part two. I didn't subscribe to fake news.
I know. Don't worry, I'll do that next video. But right now we're doing this. So my friend Your Movie Sucks, great channel, over 500,000 subs, asked me and a bunch of other YouTubers if we could talk about a movie that scared us as a kid. Now, growing up, I wasn't allowed to watch scary movies. I remember one time my parents were watching a movie downstairs, and I went down to see what all the noises were about, and my mom said, "Oh no, honey, you can't watch this, it's too scary." And then years later, I learned that the movie they were watching was Jurassic Park. I think I could have handled it, Mom. I don't know if you could tell by the length of this video, but it's going to be pretty different than the videos that I usually post. But I think it's good to try out new things, and hopefully we'll all have a fun time listening to me talk about this movie, because folks, I'm excited to share with you the movie that traumatized me most as a kid, and that movie is, drumroll please, is, you already read the title, The Dark Crystal. Okay, so The Dark Crystal came out in 1982, 14 years before I was even born. This movie was made for a whole different generation of people, but somehow I still saw it. I don't remember how I saw it, my family didn't own it on VHS, and I forget how old I was exactly, but let's say for the sake of this video, I saw this movie when I was 17. Because that's legally still a child. This movie was directed by Frank Oz and freaking Jim Henson. Jim Henson is the creator of, I don't know if you've heard of this, but The Muppets? You might have seen them before. There's no denying that Jim Henson was a very talented man when it came to puppets, and the work he did on The Dark Crystal is amazing. As much as I'm about to talk this movie down, it's honestly a work of art. The most enjoyment I got rewatching it was just the artistic appreciation of the character design, the scenery, the costumes, and most importantly, the puppetry. Some of the puppetry was amazing, like this shot. How'd they do that without CGI? And did I mention that there's no people in this film? Except for full body shots, then they just used a real person dressed up and had them not face the camera. But as I rewatched The Dark Crystal, I realized that the movie was kinda garbage. So instead of talking about the parts of the movie that scared me as a child, I'm gonna be talking about why this movie was pretty bad. So now this video just turned into one of those bad movie review videos, but honestly, I like watching other people talk about bad movies, like The Room and Birdemic and oh, what was that other one? I can't quite put my paw on it. For this video, I ended up doing some research, something I don't normally do for videos, and oh man, is this rabbit hole deep. Jim Henson had a bunch of ideas for the world of The Dark Crystal, but wasn't able to fit all of his ideas into 90 minutes of film. And because he didn't explain the rules of the world well enough, the movie suffered. It felt unfinished and unstarted. Basically, the movie didn't leave you wanting more, it just left you thinking, wait, what? Some of you might be thinking, well, James, it's just a kid's movie. Kids are dumb. Why are you analyzing a kid? Shut up. Brian Froud, one of the head artists of the movie, even said that when we finished the film, we knew that we had only seen a fragment of this other world. Bad fragment, I guess. So even the creators of this movie felt that they left out a lot of stuff. So in 2012, a three-part comic book was published to be as a prequel to the movie, and I bought and read all three of them. And I will say that they did do a better job explaining the world that Jim Henson had in mind, but you shouldn't have to read a book before you see a movie.
Especially since the books weren't available until after the movie came out.
In the movie, stuff happens for no reason. Like in one scene, the main character, this is Jen, the main character, by the way, get used to looking at this guy's face. I've done so much digging and research into this world that I'm completely desensitized by how weird this puppet looks. If you think this puppet looks creepy, you should have seen some of his earlier designs. Just be thankful this is what you ended up with. So in this scene, Jen is trying to pick out which of the crystal shards is the right one that he needs for his quest. And what does he do to find the right one? That's right, he plays his flute, and then the right shard he needed just glows. Wouldn't you do that too if you were in the same situation? This movie doesn't explain why the crystal likes his music, it doesn't come up later, it just happens. That's basically this whole movie. Things happening slowly. So here we go, children. Hold my hand as I take you on a magical journey, but not too magical that it doesn't make sense. That is The Dark Crystal.
The plot.
It starts with a narrator telling us that there's this world and that it's dying. By the way, this world is named Thra. They don't mention it once in the movie, but in the prequels and in the Wikipedia article, they all called it Thra. Okay. Thra is dying because this one crystal, this one, cracked. How? I don't know. I mean, I do know because I read the prequels, but this movie doesn't tell us. Are you still with me? Good, we're not even a minute in. Because this crystal cracked, two new species were born. The cruel Skeksis, the bad guys, and the gentle Mystics, the good guys. And both species are dying. Now, I'm no biologist, but I think they're probably dying because there's no woman. That would wipe out a species pretty quickly, I'd think. Instead of having women, the Skeksis use the crystal to make them young again. Maybe. It's either the crystal or the sun.
So too they learn to draw new life from the sun.
Okay, so then what do you need the crystal for? Now we see the good creatures, the Mystics, and with the Mystics lives another creature called a Gelfling. It's like an elfling, but with a G. You may remember him from earlier. He's naked now, but meet your protagonist, Jen. This movie makes up so many words, just try and keep up.
And a journey must begin. The journey of Jen.
Okay, that's a little pretentious movie. All right, let's tone it down a little. Then we see that the Emperor Skeksis is dying, oh no, and then we get the second scariest scene in the whole movie. Yeah, we're not even 15 minutes in and we're at the part that gave me nightmares. Then the mystic that's basically Jen's dad is also dying, and he tells Jen that he needs to find the cracked piece of the crystal, the shard, and then he just needs to plop that sucker back in the crystal where it belongs. And then boom boom, the world is saved. Again, they don't explain why doing this would save the world. Like, they could have at least tried to make something up, like once the crystal is fixed, woman will appear. Jen's dad tells him to
follow the greater sun for a day to the home of Ogre.
Now, I'm no astronomer, but I think following the sun for a day would just make you go in a circle. What am I supposed to do when it's noon? Now the Skeksis, they're like, oh well dang it guys, who's going to be our new emperor? This Skeksis named Chamberlain.
It's time to make my move.
Who is my second favorite character in this whole movie, thinks that he should be emperor. I mean, who wouldn't want to be emperor of like 8 other bird monsters? The way that you can remember that this Skeksis is Chamberlain is that every time he's on camera, he says this. Hey man, you can't be emperor, says the Skeksis. Oh yeah? Fight me for it, replied Chamberlain. Since these two are puppets and don't have lower bodies, they can't actually fight each other, which is super disappointing. So instead, the two have a competition to see who can hit a rock the hardest, because that's how you tell who's fit to lead. You can't have someone be your emperor when they can't even hit a rock that hard. Anyway, Chamberlain loses, and all the other Skeksis banish him and rip up his clothes. Okay, now hold on. Do you see what's funny about this screenshot? This Skeksis is wearing glasses, meaning in this universe, optometrists exist, and this Skeksis had to go through an eye exam to get his prescription. Do you like number one or number two? Does anyone else think that's funny? No? Alright. Anyway, after the Skeksis banish Chamberlain, they see in the crystal that there's this Gelfling just walking around. Man, I didn't know the crystal could snitch like that. So they send out these crab monsters to get him. And by the way, those crab monsters are called Garthams, and they are created by this handsome Skeksis. You'd know that if you read the Wikipedia article. Anyway, back to Jen. What's he up to?
I'm not ready to go alone. Alright. Alone, then.
Took you long enough. Jen is supposed to follow the sun to Agura's house? Agura's? He runs into her and she's this old hag who tells him that the three suns are going to line up soon and when that happens, the world might end. Or it will begin. She doesn't know.
I know because I've already seen this movie.
She also, for some reason, has a box of crystals. One of them is the shard that Jen is looking for, but she doesn't know which.
Which one is it?
Don't know!
So Jen narrows down the box of crystals to three shards.
It's one of these three, I'm sure.
What? No, you've never even seen the dark crystal. How do you know it's one of those? Whatever, okay, I can roll with this. Then, if you remember, Jen gets the idea to play his flute at the shard, and then the correct shard just glows for some reason. Why does the crystal react to flute music? That's not a thing. Crystals don't have ears. Now, when you create a fantasy world, you can't explain everything. Sometimes the answer is just, oh, it's magic. In Frozen, they don't explain how Elsa got her ice powers. She was just born with it, okay? It's magic. And the audience is all okay with it, as long as they don't take it too far. But this movie just tries to pull off so much stuff that doesn't make sense. There's a line, and this movie crosses it multiple times. Then the crab people attack Agura's house, Jen escapes with a shard, boom, next day. Okay, I know I've been talking bad about this movie, but the amount of detail in this forest scene is pretty amazing. I mean, it's not doing anything to drive the plot forward, but I just think it's cool to look at. Anyway, back to review mode. Jen falls in the mud, what an idiot, and then he meets up with the... Oh jeez, that's a girl! That's a girl! So there's a girl Gelfling now, her name is Kira.
I'll take a potato chip and eat it.
She's speaking gibberish.
And
then for some unexplained, unimportant reason, when they touch hands, they share memories. I mean, I don't know exactly what happens when you touch hands with another woman. I'm not entirely sure, but I don't think that's supposed to happen.
What's happening?
We're dream fasting, sharing our memories.
I'm having a bath.
Okay, three things. First, this seems like a plot devicey way to just throw in some backstory, but whatever. Second, Jen, you just found out that you're not the last of your species, and when you realize that you're sharing memories with her, you decide to show this person you just met you having a bath.
I mean, I guess she did show you her mom dying, so let's just get all that personal stuff out of the way. And third, somewhere on Earth, there exists a baby naked Jen puppet, and I need to have it. Then we're introduced to my third favorite character, Kira's dog, Fizzgig. He doesn't really add anything to the story, he's just that lovable pet slash side character. Hey, that's a lot like my dog.
Hey, puppy!
Also, Kira can talk to animals. Okay. Then we're treated to this really great scene. A whole 2 minutes of the Skeksis eating. But honestly, though, I kinda love this scene. It does a great job creeping me out. Okay, it does go on for a minute too long, but bear with me here. The Skeksis' clothing and silverware are Victorian, so it gives off a haunted mansion sort of vibe. And just the character design and the way the Skeksis are eating, it just comes off as unnerving. A lot of movies' scary parts are jump scares or gore. At least I think they do that. I'm not allowed to watch scary movies. But this is such a different way to unease an audience. It kind of reminds me of the first half of a Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared video. Nothing necessarily scary is happening, but it's still able to make the audience feel uncomfortable. Basically, the whole point of this scene was that the crab people were like, hey, we got this old hag, but we didn't get the Gelfling. And then the Skeksis were like, wow, okay, release the crystal bats.
Crystal bats, fly! Search the land, search the water, search the sky!
Okay, this might be nitpicking, and I'm no Gelfling expert, but I think you can rule out searching the sky. I don't see too many Gelflings just flying around. So one of the bats finds Jen and Kira. They go back to Kira's village. Jen doesn't even know where he's supposed to take the shard. His dad never told him what to do after he got the shard. He tells Kira about his quest and what Algura told him.
You know the three suns in the sky? They're going to come together soon. It's called the great something or other.
See, even Jen doesn't remember these made-up names. Really would have been convenient if you told her this information when you were sharing memories. So then the crab monsters show up and basically murder and capture Kira's whole family. Yeah, it was pretty traumatizing. And right when the crab monsters are about to attack Jen and Kira, Chamberlain comes out of nowhere. Remember the guy? He steps in between them and stops the attack. And Kira and Jen escape because Chamberlain saved them. Oh, and then Jen throws away the shard. Boom, next day. Kira finds the shard that Jen threw, and then the two find some hieroglyphics about a prophecy. It says a Gelfling is going to save the world and kill all the Skeksis. It doesn't matter. And then, oh, Chamberlain shows up. Hey, Chamberlain. Hey, guys, I'm sorry for killing your entire species. We just didn't want the prophecy to come to fruition. You understand, right? So what if we all go to the castle together, we can eat some food, and just have a gay old time and talk this whole thing over? What do you think? And then he says, please, a lot.
Please, please, please. Please, yes, please.
Now how can you say no to this lovable guy? He just got kicked out of the Skeksis Club, he's all alone, he just saved you from some crab monsters, and he did say please a lot. I'm just saying, if I was Jen, I totally would have trusted Chamberlain 100%. But instead, Jen just stares at him blankly, and then Kira ruins everything and tells Jen not to trust him, and then they run away.
Wait! Please make peace!
Eh, might have been the right call. So then, for some reason, Kira knows where the castle is, and since she can talk to animals, she calls up these things called Landstriders. They're just a person walking on four stilts, and they ride the Landstriders all the way to the castle. I have a lot of problems with this next scene. So one of the Skeksis takes a podling that they just captured, locks it into a chair, and tells the podling that they're gonna suck its essence away and make it a slave.
Won't hurt. We just want to drain your living essence. Then you can be the same as the other podlings here. A slave.
You know, the podlings don't speak English. They speak a whole different language. The Skeksis is just talking gibberish to this guy while he's just locked in a chair like, what's going on? Like, none of what you're saying is going through this guy's head. And so only the Emperor can drink the essence, and that will make him stay young forever. So what do you need the sun for? And also, what killed the last Skeksis? Looked like old age to me. Yeah, no, that's cool and all, but we get the most terrifying scene in the whole movie. That's right, this is the winner. You gave me the most nightmare scene. You win $1 million. Congratulations, scene! I can go on for hours about how this part of the movie gave me nightmares, but honestly, it speaks for itself. I think what made it worse was that the podling was tied down to the chair and he was just so helpless and his whole face melted off and just... Ugh! But now that I'm older, all I can think is... What do you guys need slaves for? So far, the only thing slaves have done was pull on a rope to make some swords appear out of the ground and bring you guys a plate of food. Why is there such a high demand for slaves that you need to make new ones? What do you guys even do all day? Then Kira and Jen arrive at the castle. They see the crab people taking in the pod people from Kira's village. They try and save the podlings, but completely fail. The Lance Striders die immediately. Jen and Kira open the cage that the podlings are in, and then the two get cornered. And what are they going to do, you ask? Well, isn't it obvious? They're gonna jump and slowly float down to safety because Kira has wings! That never came up in the memory sharing bit! So I guess when the Skeksis told the Crystal Bats to search for the Gelflings in the sky, they weren't that far off. Hey Kira, sorry we left your whole family back there. We totally didn't save them, like, at all. They're probably gonna get turned into slaves now. Okay, we're almost done, everyone. We're getting to Climax Town. Jen and Kira sneak into the castle. Chamberlain's there. He basically murders Jen. And since he captured a Gelfling, he's not an outcast anymore. You guys should have just went with him the first time. Now two Landstriders are dead. Kira goes into the slave room, and as a kid, I was already so traumatized the first time seeing a podling get turned into a slave, and now seeing Kira getting her essence taken away, I lost my mind. Oh, shoot! Kira's getting turned into a slave! Luckily, remember the old hag, Agura? She's like, yo, you can talk to animals, just ask them to help you. Oh, okay.
Kamalea!
She breaks free, and the animals push the Skeksis that was in the room down this pit, and that kills them. Leading up to this point, it's hinted that the Skeksis and the Mystics are, like, connected. When something happens to a Skeksis, there's a Mystic counterpart that experiences the same thing. So when this Skeksis died, there was a Mystic just walking around that just... And none of the other Mystics react.
Yeah, it happens.
Then we see that the Mystics can control the crab monsters. I'm guessing it's because they're connected to the Skeksis, who also can control the crab monsters. So having a Mystic go with Jen on his journey in the first place would have been super helpful back when Kira's village was getting raided. Alright, let's just wrap this up. Vizgig dies, Jen's not really dead, he finds the Dark Crystal, he jumps to it and then drops the shard. Kira has to throw the shard back to Jen, but while she's doing that, she gets murdered. I said spoiler warning, right? And then Jen plops that sucker back into the crystal. The castle crumbles around everyone and the world is saved. But first, the Skeksis and the Mystics walk into each other because they're connected, remember? They become one again, and are you ready for this? They walk into each other and they turn into tree aliens. I'm not even joking. According to the prequels, these things are actually aliens. This is what the whole movie has been building up to. The bad guys are just one half of a schizophrenic alien tree person, and if you read the prequels, you'd know that. Is this supposed to be a plot twist? Because to me, it just seems like a plot is doing whatever it wants. So much weird, unexplained stuff has already happened in this movie, so at this point, I don't even care. By the way, Kira and Vizgig don't actually die. This is a kid's movie, after all. And then the world is saved, even though there's only like three people who inhabit it now. The end. So that was the movie. Want to know something funny? I've already used more words in this video than there were words in the entire movie. Also, I need to ask, Jen was supposedly the chosen one.
At this time, Jen is the chosen one.
But I would make the argument that Kira should have been the chosen one. Let me go down my list. She saved Jen from the mud, she sniped a crystal bat out of the sky, when the crab monsters attacked, she had to tell Jen to run, she found the shard on the ground after Jen threw it, she tells Jen not to trust Chamberlain, she knew where the castle was and got the Landstriders to take them there, she used her wings to float Jen down to safety, she was able to get out of being turned into a slave by herself, and she threw the shard back to Jen after his butterfingers dropped it. And how does she get rewarded? By getting stabbed. All Jen did was play his flute at a magic rock. This guy's a doofus. Who chose Jen to be the chosen one? Bad choice. Now, I've said who my second and third favorite character in this movie is, but who's my favorite character? There's only like three other characters to choose from, so who could it be? Well, ladies and gentlemen, my favorite character isn't in this movie. My favorite character of the Dark Crystal universe is Reunip. Agura's son. Okay, I know I just finished the movie, but let me talk about the prequel comics for a minute. Remember Agura, the old lady? Well, turns out she's an immortal being and has been around since the creation of this world. Alright, and one day a meteor hits the planet, and she, like anyone else would do, gives life to it. And out pops Reunip. And he's basically the main character of the prequel books, and is also technically an alien. I like him because he's the only one who questions what's going on. He asks the same questions I'm asking. So he's my favorite, he's the only character I ever wanted to cosplay. If they ever make the prequels into a movie, I call dibs on playing Reunip, that's how it works. I call dibs on playing this character. I just show up to auditions and I'm like, I actually called dibs, so... Also, in the second book, Augura and her son are having a moment, and Reunip says, "Will you remember me, mother? After all the harm I caused? I will never forget you, child." Well, you didn't really seem to remember him in the movie. Also, if there's any producers watching, that was my audition just now to play Reunip. Would I recommend you watch The Dark Crystal? Well, I did just spoil the whole thing, so no, it would be a waste of time at this point. But if I was talking to someone who hasn't watched this video, then yeah, I would recommend it. Even with all of its flaws, I still think it's a creative film and... I don't know, maybe it'd be fun to talk about it afterwards. Maybe I was desensitized doing all this research, but I also enjoyed the prequel comic books. After all, my favorite character's in there. There's also a manga that was made, Legends of the Dark Crystal, and it's supposed to take place in between these books and the movie, so these books don't even bridge the gap between the start of the... It leaves still on a cliffhanger. These books still leave on a cliffhanger. Speaking of manga, there were plans to make a sequel to The Dark Crystal, another movie, but the film ended up getting canceled. But a 12-part comic series is being produced by Boom Studios, and it's not even completed yet. They're only on, like, the second installment. This is recent, you guys, so now is a great time to get into the Dark Crystal fandom. Like I said, I think The Dark Crystal is a creative story. Jim Henson really bit off more than he can chew making this movie, but seeing how many comics have been made to tell this story... Maybe The Dark Crystal is told better through comics and not with the limitations of puppets from the 80s. Anyway, that's just what I thought about the movie. And publish. A 23-minute long movie review about an 80s puppet movie sure is different than the content I usually post. And even though it was a lot of work, it was fun to try something new, and I think the video turned out pretty good. Am I right, Chamberlain Funko Pop? Well, it's a good thing I'll never... ever have to worry about this franchise ever again. Are you sure about that? When I made a review about a cult classic puppet movie that came out 35 years ago, the last thing I was expecting was that said franchise would get a reboot announced 2 weeks after I posted. And every single day since then, people have been tweeting at me saying, "Hey James, did you know Netflix is making a Dark Crystal series?" Yes, I know. Do you know who you're talking to? If you don't know what the heck I'm talking about, then I recommend you watch my video, The Movie That Was Too Scary for Baby James. In that video, I reviewed a scary kids movie called The Dark Crystal. The movie was more or less a passion project of Jim Henson, the creator of The Muppets, and so this movie was done entirely with puppets. It came out before I was born, but I still somehow watched it and got scarred for life. In my review, I said some good things about the movie, like I thought it was a very creative and artistic film, but I, also said some negative things about it, too. As YouTubers, sometimes we forget that our videos are public and can be viewed by anyone. And when we talk about companies, we can forget that real people are attached to those properties who have poured hundreds of hours into these projects, and there's a chance they'll see our videos. And unbeknownst to me, Lisa Henson, current CEO of the Henson Company, saw my video. And for some reason, I never considered that was ever going to happen. If I had known that Lisa frickin' Henson was gonna watch my video, I probably would have worded a few things differently. I don't think she was too mad at my video, though, because she invited me to tour the Henson office, and I got to see a real-life Skeksis puppet, which resurfaced an unhealthy amount of repressed memories, and I got to meet some of the puppeteers, which was a whole lot of fun. Also, before Age of Resistance was released, I got contacted by Netflix, and they invited me and some other Dark Crystal fans to an early screening of the first two episodes, and I signed a non-disclosure agreement so I couldn't spoil anything. I don't remember when that NDA said I was allowed to talk about it again, but hopefully I'm in the clear. When I was in the early screening, I just remember thinking about how cool that these characters in this world were back on the big screen. Netflix has a pretty big screen. And the puppetry and cinematography have only gotten better. And the fact that 95% of everything was done with practical effects and puppets, it's beautiful! There's not a single human in this series, except in episode 10 when this puppeteer's head can be seen for a couple frames. I just checked and they actually took it out, so...
I still saw it. So much time and care and hard work was put into this series that there was a documentary made about how hard it was to make this series. If any of you are wondering, no, Reunip does not make an appearance in Age of Resistance, nor is there a naked baby Jen puppet. Also, if you're worried that the show wasn't going to be as dark and scary as the original, don't worry. It's darker and scarier than the original. The Netflix Family Twitter account was nice enough to timestamp every scary part in the series, and as you can see, stuff goes down in episode 10. Surprisingly, though, they didn't blacklist the scene of the Skeksis peeing out of three different pee streams in episode 6 at 28 minutes and 41 seconds. Really makes you think. So, artistically, this series is beautiful, and it needs to do well because it's left open for a season 2, and I want a season 2 to get greenlit. I'm not going to do a plot summary of the whole thing like I did in the first review because I don't want this video to be an hour long, and you should watch it for yourself. I'm not just going to do everything for you, I'm not your mom. But there are some things you should know before you go watching the series. This is kinda spoilery, but I won't spoil that much. So this alien planet is home to these creatures called Gelflings. They can share memories with each other by holding hands, and the girl Gelflings have wings. There's also this other creature called Agura, who's been around since the beginning of the world. She's basically Yoda's sassy grandma. And then out of nowhere, these tree aliens visit. Stay with me here. And they crack this very important crystal, and in doing so, they split into two different creatures. Their goodness becomes this thing called a mystic, who are dumb, and their bad side become these cool bird monsters called Skeksis, and then the Skeksis took over the entire world, so whoops. None of this is explained in the original movie, and it's not explained in the series until episode 7, but I think that the tree alien backstory should have started the series. Which is why I just spoiled it for you. The original 90-minute film already had so much lore, and this new Netflix reboot just added even more lore? There's even a character named Lore? How much lore is there? Speaking of names, there are a lot of made-up words in this series, and sometimes those made-up words are hard to remember. Within the first minute of Age of Resistance, the narrator tells us that there are seven clans of Gelflings, but then only names three, because there are only three important ones that we should care about. I don't even know the names of the other four clans, and I'm like a Dark Crystal aficionado. Also, there are like 10 evil bird monsters, all with names like Skekso, Skeksil, Skektek, and Shrek. Granted, most of the time they go by their more common names like Chamberlain or the Emperor, but gosh dang it, I can't even remember some of those names. That's the pussy one, and that's the one that made that weird face in the original movie, and that's the one whose voice does not sound like a Skeksis at all.
Now, what vexes you, child?
Another thing you should know is that I thought this series was pretty slow. Maybe it's because I'm impatient, or I'm used to watching YouTube videos at 2x speeds exclusively, but do you remember in the original movie how there was a scene where the Skeksis ate dinner for 2 whole minutes? And visually, it was amazing, but the whole time you're thinking, yeah, I get it. Well, there are a lot of scenes like that in the series. Let's take the beginning of episode 2, for example. It starts with a character we've never seen before waking up and putting on his shoes and making porridge and then spilling the porridge on his shirt and brushing his hair, then roughing it up, then grabbing his cleaning supplies. And it's just a whole minute of this unnamed character getting ready for his day. It's just so poor. Just cut it, please! And it wouldn't be that bad if this was the only example, but trust me, there are plenty of examples. I just don't want to spoil any of them for you. Turning a 90-minute movie into a 9-hour TV series, you're going to have some filler or some scenes that don't necessarily drive the plot forward. I get that. Luckily, I found this Chrome plugin that lets you watch Netflix at 2x speed, so
it's all good.
Making this video has got me thinking about prequels and how tricky they are to do right. In the original movie, there are only 2 Gelflings left in the entire world, so a prequel that sets up a world with 7 different Gelfling clans, we as an audience know that something's gonna happen, and it ain't gonna look good for the Gelfling. The series also added this MacGuffin Halo sword-looking thing that was supposed to save the world, but the whole time watching that, I kept thinking, no, That's not how the world is saved. The world's not saved until 1982. Also, there are certain characters that we know can't die because they're in the original movie, but boy does this show make you think some OG characters are gonna die. It almost makes me wish that the writers used the 80s Dark Crystal movie as inspiration and rebooted the series in its own separate universe. Movie reviewers tend to focus a lot on the negatives, and I don't want to come off as a hater because I really did enjoy this series, and I want a season 2 to get made, so let's end this video with some of the things I liked about this series. I like that we got to see the Skeksis with more personality because they were always so over-the-top evil. The Hunter Skeksis was just on a whole new level of cool. All the other Skeksis never came across as threatening. Like look how slow they walk. I could beat them up. But the Hunter Skeksis, oh man, he was awesome. Do you think he'll be my friend? I like that the series didn't tone down the darkness, and if anything, they amplified it, because everyone like me should have a deep-seated fear of puppets. There are some great nods to the original Dark Crystal, like when the Emperor Skeksis says,
I will never be dust!
But we all know that's the very first thing he does in the original movie. Celadon is a piece of garbage and does not deserve a redemption arc. The voice acting is amazing. There are a lot of talented people voicing these characters, like Luke Skywalker. A YouTuber named Barnaby Dixon, who made these very cool mantis finger puppets, got to work on a scene where the puppets put on a mini puppet show. And that was everything I liked about Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance. So, in conclusion, if you have 9 hours of free time, download the Video Speed Controller plugin, set that bad boy to 2, and save yourself 4.5 hours. But do watch Age of Resistance. Also, executives, if you still need someone to play Rayunip... Hello. Hey. Recently, I read the worst YouTube comment ever, and I can't stop thinking about it. This comment lives in my head completely rent-free. It lives in its own private penthouse. The comment was concerning my upload schedule, and it was, if anime studios can make an episode of anime in 1 week, then these YouTubers can make a video in a month. Initially, I reacted like, you think that's how this works? You think anime studios post an episode and go, great work, team! Well, time to make the next episode this week! Hope none of you have any plans! I know the working conditions in Japan are bad, but sheesh! I guess all the animators are just slacking off between seasons then, huh? And as I thought about it more, I realized, I can't get too mad. This person is just uneducated about the animation industry and is probably a minor. And then I thought, hey, I know a bit about animation behind the scenes. Maybe I could talk about being an artist and educate people on the animation pipeline. So that way, I won't get any more uneducated comments. For this video, when I say artist, I'm going to be talking about the Google definition of an artist. Noun, a person who produces paintings or drawings as a profession or hobby. You know, the pen and paper artists. I'm not really going to be talking about artists who make music or birthday cakes or take black and white photos of sunsets because I want to talk about cartoons. I make cartoons. Now, it should come to no surprise that I'm pro-artist. Well, not a pro-artist. Are you kidding? I know my skill level. I still can't draw fingers. What I'm saying is I will support anyone who wants to make art. If you're making art as a hobby, then that's a really great creative outlet, and having something physical as an end result is incredibly rewarding. But if you want to turn making art into a full-time job, you might want to sit down and consider a few things. Like, are you sure you don't want to go to law school? The biggest challenge all artists face is they have to eat food to survive. And in this capitalist society, food costs money. So artists are challenged to somehow take being good at making shapes and turn that into money. I know of 4 ways an artist can make a living. The first way is to be so good at art that people will pay money to hang it up in their house. The second option is to make caricature drawings at beaches and tourist traps. The third option is to sell your plasma. And the fourth option, which is the most common option, is to make drawings that people will pay you to make. And do a little bit of option 3 on the side. Some artists will take commissions, which is basically an artist going, hey, I'll draw whatever you want, asterisk, for $100. And people will go, what the f***? Art should be free! I was gonna give you so much exposure to my 50 Twitter followers! Or people will go, I want you to draw this cute animal character I made, and while at first your price might seem a bit high to the uneducated, I understand that art is a time-consuming process and you need to eat too. So here's a crisp $100. But another somewhat more stable idea is that artists will get jobs at studios or work for a YouTuber, and we'll be like, hey, we'll give you money if you draw specifically what we want, and if we don't like your art, We'll make sure to communicate clearly what we would like changed and work as a team to do the best we can. Or you're fired! And that leads us into animation. An important thing to remember for animation is that drawings equal time plus money. Exactly how much time? Well, to answer that one commenter's question, no, an anime studio does not make an episode of anime in 1 week. I think. South Park is what making an episode in a week looks like. And truthfully, that's very impressive. I take months trying to figure out what the heck I'm even going to talk about. Making a single episode of a cartoon from scratch takes about 2 years. Don't believe me? Well, let's see what Yakko from the 2020 Animaniacs has to say in the very first episode. At least, we still think there's a President Trump. You see, the writers are writing this in 2018. Now that doesn't mean it took 26 years to make the first season of the Animaniacs. There's a lot of moving parts that happen when producing an animated TV series. For starters, the whole season of the show gets made at the same time. While the writers are writing episode 12, the storyboard team is boarding episode 3, and the design team is designing the bowling shoes that are going to be worn in episode 6. And it's someone's entire job to make sure that everyone's doing their job. This is called the animation pipeline. And there's so many other departments that I could honestly make a whole other video about this pipeline. If you're interested, I'll do it. But just know that it takes roughly 2 years to make a season of a cartoon show, and that's why when shows reference memes, they're extremely outdated. You know, like a boss! It's beautiful, isn't it? This exterior nighttime city skyline background. This background was drawn by one of my background artists, Annie Loomis, and it took 7 hours to make. And it was used specifically for this clip. If it wasn't for the Cats movie, I would have thought Hollywood knew what they were doing too. It lasted for 4 seconds. 7 hours of work, 4 seconds of content. So before we continue, I'm going to make you all sit and appreciate this background for another 4 seconds so I can double the value of this background. Backgrounds can be a time-consuming process, and the whole purpose of them is to be in the back of the ground. They're not even the focus. So storyboarders will sketch out a scene to set the staging through layout, posing, and character expression. And during this phase, I'm trying to find places where I can reuse backgrounds or take pieces of other backgrounds and Frankenstein monster them together to make an entirely new background. Like how I used the city background to be outside this window. Or how I took the buildings from this background, the bushes from this background, and the bench from this background and made an entirely new background. And hopefully, none of you noticed. Am I being cheap? Or cutting corners? Absolutely, but that's the point. That gives another background artist more time to make something else, like this James-themed city skyline. Instead of having to draw 20 different backgrounds of a bedroom, we already have a bedroom, let's just do something else, please. It's not being lazy, it's getting the most use, the most mileage out of your hard work. I see this next story pop up on Twitter about every month, and it makes me want to stab my eyes out. If you look at this scene from The Jungle Book and this scene from Winnie the Pooh, these two similarly proportioned boys are eerily moving in the exact same way. Wait, was this plagiarized? Did someone from Winnie the Pooh plagiarize The Jungle Book? No. Remember what I said about drawings equal time plus money? Well, back in the old days of animation, before fancy graphics cards and floppy disks, animation frames had to be physically painted onto floppy, transparent sheets called cells. So animated movies were essentially a really long flipbook with over 100,000 hand-drawn painted pages. Back then, drawings equaled even more time and even more money. This whole sequence had to not only be drawn 24 times a second, but it also had to have the correct timing to look like a little boy was jumping on rocks. Just because you drew 24 Mowglis doesn't mean they're going to look good when you play the frames together. So if you're making a cartoon movie in the 70s, and you need a scene where a young boy character is just being a dude and throwing rocks, and you need a really climactic fight scene, are you gonna spend the time and money drawing another boy throwing another rock when someone else already did that 10 years ago? Or are you gonna reuse the animation the studio already made, and then have more time and budget to make an even epicker fight scene? If these movies were from two different studios, then yes, that would be a completely different story. But Disney owns this movement of our boy Mowgli, so they're allowed to use that movement on our boy Chris. Turning your art into a full-time job is very difficult.
I'm extremely lucky to not only have this opportunity, but to be able to build an amazing team of talented artists to create these cartoons and share them with you. And because of you watching these videos and supporting me, I'm able to reinvest money into the team so we can make better quality content and I can support more artists. It's a win-win symbiotic thing we got going on. So if you ever wanted to get into the art industry, good luck, get drawing, and start putting that portfolio together. As some of you may know, Jaden has already made a video about the Scribble Showdown tour me, her, Domix, Ross, and Aaron went on in 2019. But we toured again, baby, last November! We were scheduled to go earlier, but then something came up. For this round of touring, we did more than double the amount of shows than last time, so that means this video will be twice as good as Jaden's. So, touring during a global pandemic was a lot of fun. Anytime we had a day off, everyone on the crew had to take a rapid test, and people coming to the shows needed a proof of vaccine to get inside, and worst of all, we weren't able to say hi to people after the show. I know a lot of people waited outside in the cold for us to come out, only to see us at a distance load ourselves into the bus in our PJs, going, "Sorry, we're not allowed, we have to stay in our bubble." Before the tour even started, we had a big problem. Domix couldn't get his Canadian visa approved to come work in the US, so he was unable to tour with us. But luckily, we found a sub for Dom, someone who loved maple syrup just as much as Dom and was willing to drop everything and tour with us for a whole month, Emily from the channel Emerichu. And she killed it on stage. Like, straight up murder. She was super funny, artistic, and she drew these awesome pictures of all of us and just... I'm not crying, shut up! When Ross met Emily, the very first thing he said to her was, "Hello, touring's going to be so fun. Just don't sleep the wrong way on the bus, because if it crashes, you'll break your neck and die painfully. Also, you're not allowed to poop on the bus." I would know. Fortunately, no one pooped or broke their neck during the whole tour. And I still haven't pooped. Your body adapts to crazy things. During the last tour, Ross couldn't control his bowels, but this time, he couldn't control his brain. He had what he describes as intense, debilitating nightmares that felt like a Nintendo 64 rumble pack was added to the experience. And if you want to hear more about what Ross's twisted mind thought up of when he was unconscious, then go check out the video he made on his channel. But not now, because I'm talking. So, on this tour, I wanted to be better at taking photos. You know, the reason I don't have a vlogging channel is because I forget to film anything that happens on my trips. And as I was taking a photo of a venue, I found out that my phone could do something called Photosphere. Photospheres are full 360-degree photos that show you everything at every angle. Here's a picture of the venue, and here's what the ground looked like. They're the superior way of taking photos. I took a photosphere of every venue. Hey, you know what else is round and cool? That's a great question. It's the type of question we got asked in our VIP Q&A panel. Before every show, the five of us would go out and do a Q&A panel for the people who bought VIP tickets. And 93.75% of the Q&As were absolutely fine. One time, someone asked a question that was directed at their fiancé, and it was, "Will you marry me?" Oh, I'm gonna take a photosphere of this. Hold on, you'll need to stay still for like 2 minutes. I wish that question was directed at me. I would have loved to kiss someone on tour. Anyways, one of the cues we got was a little odd. I'm not gonna tell you which show this was at, but it was in Florida, because of course it was. There was one guy in the audience wearing a suit who was reaching his hand so high up that his butt was out of his chair and he was visibly shaking with excitement. So given how urgent this guy was being, Aaron called on him, but now we know not to call on those types of people. You in the suit. The guy stands up screaming, "Yes! Thank you!" And he goes on a long-winded explanation saying, "Look, I'm 26 years old, I'm not getting any younger, I want to do what you do!" Okay. What's your question? My question is that I want to make a bet with all of you that in 1 year I'm going to be up on stage with you performing at Scribble Showdown! I wanted to say, "I bet $1 million because we're not holding auditions." But instead, I said, "I love your enthusiasm. That's great. But don't quantify your success into a certain time frame, because that's only going to set yourself up for failure. Especially on the internet, growing an audience takes time and luck. Nothing is ever guaranteed.
and we told him good luck and started answering other cues, and then at the end of the Q&A, as we were walking off stage, the guy screamed out, "See you in a year!" And that made me upset because he didn't listen to anything I just said. To his credit, he'll definitely be remembered. Not in the way he wants to, but remembered. And he's coming on tour with us next year, so, you know, be on the lookout for that. Another fun fan interaction that happened was in the freezing state of Chicago. We arrived in Chicago a day early, so me and Emily decided to walk to The Bean. Now, I have been told that The Bean is not called The Bean, and the artist actually wants it to be called something else. So as we walked up to The Bean, I kept chanting, "It's The Bean, it's The Bean." I took some photospheres, and as we started to leave, we passed another group who were chanting, "It's The Bean, it's The Bean." And I thought, wow, those guys are annoying. But then they made eye contact with me through the bean's reflection and were like, "Oh my god, are you James?" And I said, "Who?" And then someone saw Emily and said, "Oh my god, it's Jaden!" And I started laughing and I pointed to my Scribble Showdown jacket. No, it's this one, not this one, this one. But I don't think they understood because when we were taking a group photo, one of them said, "Jaden should go in front." And I said, "Yeah, Jaden, come over here." So on the last tour, Aaron had just gotten into Magic the Gathering, which is a card game I've been playing longer than him. Back then, I had to explain some of the rules and show him the pro gamer strats. But during 2019 to 2021, Aaron got really into Magic. He knows the name of every single card and what it does. Like, I'll pull a card from a pack and he'll be like, "Oh, nice, Branching Evolution. That's like a worse doubling season. But you could combo it with the Colossal Dreadmaw and the Truffle Mixer. No, the Truffle Mater and get Gary out on turn 5. Gary's what the community calls the Gray Apostle." What? At one of the venues we stayed at, I noticed that there was a random 2 of diamonds glued to the ceiling. So I says to Aaron, "Hey Aaron, say a card, any card." 7 of clubs. No, lower. 3 of clubs. Lower. 2 of clubs. Okay, now change the suit. 2 of diamonds. Now, you chose that card, right?
Okay.
Look up. What? But then Aaron bought a deck of playing cards and performed a card trick that forced someone to pick the 2 of diamonds, and then Aaron would tell them to look up saying, "Is that your card?" What? And because of that, Aaron started to learn other card tricks and would try them out on people. So I don't want to take any credit for Aaron's hobbies, but I totally got him into Magic, and I got him into Magic. While we were on tour, we got invited to be a part of Jacksepticeye's hashtag ThankMiss livestream that was raising money to build homeless shelters. And on stream, Aaron had this crazy idea that if we reached our goal, he would kiss one of us. And then we reached our goal, and then nothing notable happened. If this show sounds like a lot of fun and you want to come see all of us play drawing games live, and you live in Europe, then great news! We have a Europe tour scheduled for April. Get your tickets on the Scribble Showdown website, and next time we plan on touring in the States again, I'll let you know. But for now, thank you everyone who came to a show, unless you live in Brooklyn. Thank you all for watching, and thank you everyone on the Real Good Touring team who babysat us for a month and made this show possible. Touring with you was a blast. And now, I'm going back to sleep on my tour bus coffin, facing the correct way while repressing my urge to poop. And golly, I sure do hope I don't get any nightmares. Right, bunk buddy Ross? Ross?
I haven't slept in 11 days.
All right, James. Are you ready for this?
I was going to say, that's only happening one time.
Down! I'm crazy! Yeah, I'm 25. That's a quarter of a century. And I've been doing YouTube full-time for a nickel of a century. My life's practically over. I'm at a point now where when people recognize me, they'll say, "OMG, James, I've been watching you since the 8th grade. And I'll be like, "OMG, your beard is bigger than mine." So I've been thinking, you know those going through puberty videos your 8th grade science teacher shows you for some reason? The ones that are like, "Hey boys, I'm the puberty platypus, and I'm here to tell you that your body is going through some wonderful changes. You're gonna start growing hair in weird places, and smelling bad, but that's just the wonders of life." And then for the girl one, it's like, "Oh, ladies, you're gonna want to sit down for this one." Well, I think they need to make a puberty part 2 video that they show to high school seniors and prepare them better for the quote-unquote adult life they're about to face. Schools just give you a piece of paper and a funny hat and send you off into the world expecting you to figure out your intricate and complicated life through what? Trial and error? I want the Puberty Part 2 video that I'm planning on making to start like this. The puberty platypus will come back on screen and will be like, "Well, kids, you did it. See? Puberty wasn't so bad. For some of you. Unfortunately, dear children, this is only the beginning." And then he'll start talking about all the fun things you can expect in the following years. Like, instead of growing hair in new places, for some of you, your hair is going to start thinning and falling out. And if you're a guy worried about hair loss, then I've got good news. This video is sponsored by Bald People. They're paying me money to tell you to just shave it all. Shave it. Looking good, Rush! You're also going to be perpetually tired. And before you start thinking, "I'm not going to be tired, I'm going to get 8 hours of sleep every night." First of all, no you're not. And second of all, that's not going to help. You will still be tired, and there's no escape. Why do you think adults say, "Ha ha ha, don't talk to me till I've had my coffee"? It's because every adult, from the moment they wake up, is dead tired. And we need stimulants just to function. You're also going to start getting excited about things you used to think were stupid, like furniture shopping. Sometimes you'll go on Zillow and look at the most expensive houses and think, "Oh, that's a nice kitchen backsplash," and then wonder where your youth went. Another thing, 90% of the mail you get is worthless, but the other 10% of mail is very, very important. Like, if you ignore it, your water, power, and Wi-Fi get shut off. Important. Or you'll get mail that's like, "Hey, you owe the government some money, and we know how much money you owe us, but we're not going to tell you, stupid. So you either have to figure that out yourself, or pay another person some money so they can tell you how much money you owe the government." Hey there. I don't want you to be scared of growing up. There's still plenty of pros that come with being older. And also, you can't escape it. You'll get to be independent and make your own decisions. Did your parents never let you get a tattoo? Well, now you can. But I want to put it somewhere that I can easily cover it up when I visit them for Christmas. That way it's not weird if I exclusively wear turtlenecks around them. I just like them. Another pro, you won't complain about the food you have at home because you'll only ever buy the food you like and can afford. You're independent now. You can eat cake for breakfast. However, if you do that, your stomach will hurt and you won't be able to move for 8 hours. Okay, at first you'll be able to get by with bagel bites for dinner. That's a standard college-grade meal. But after a couple of years of that abuse, your body will go, "Yo, do you think you could throw down some, I don't know, fruit every once in a while? Yeah, we gotta make, like, new cells for your developing brain, and we've been making them solely out of bagel bites." It is genuinely upsetting that I have to figure out what I have to eat 3 times a day. There are some days where I'm hungry, but I'm not craving anything, and I know I have to eat, but I'm looking through my fridge, and I end up eating string cheese and grapes for lunch. On a bagel. I wish I could just unhinge my jaw and eat a month's worth of food like a snake. Do snakes only eat once a month? I don't know, I hate snakes. 50% of my driving destinations is to the grocery store, and the other 50% is drive-thrus. It's all food-based. Oh, actually, sometimes I do have to go to the gas station. Wait, that's just food for my car. I've been trying to eat out less, so I bought boxed frozen orange chicken instead of going to Panda Express. But then I realized, I'm still eating out, I'm just heating up the orange chicken in my own microwave. Some of you might like cooking. I don't. Whenever I cook a meal, I purposely cook way more food than I need so I can get 2 meals out of only cooking one. I would rather eat progressively staler pasta all week than have to cook every day. But even if you like cooking, I know one aspect of it you don't like: cleaning up the mess afterwards. Why do you think the rule, "I cooked it, you clean it," exists? And now that you're an adult, you're about to learn, it never stops. Get used to doing the dishes and laundry, because as long as you eat and sweat, those are 2 chores you do until the grave. Laundry is such a prevalent chore that I guarantee someone watching this video needs to put the wash into the dryer, but instead they're watching YouTube. Well, go on. Leave. I don't know how I'm going to handle folding dishes and cleaning laundry for the rest of my life. I'm only 25 and already burned out from it. Hey, speaking of burnout, I want to talk about something I just learned recently called having a healthy work-life balance. Some of you might have started working from home this last year. Welcome to the club. You now have no reason to go outside. So take it from a guy who's been working from home for 5 years.
go outside anyway. There's definitely benefits to working from home. Like, you get to work in your pajamas and... But it can be tough to work and live under the same roof. And I think a lot of young people have this mindset of being on the grind is a good thing, or at least a normal one. While it is important to work hard to achieve your goals, you need to be aware of burnout. And as a content creator who is his own boss, it's very easy to fall into an unhealthy work ethic. If you think your boss is annoying, try having a boss that lives inside your head and will not shut up about working. It could be Saturday and you're hanging out with your friends and your boss in the back of your head will say, "You could be working." There will always be work that needs to be done. You will always feel anxious about not posting. And since you technically live in the office, you could theoretically work well into the early hours of the morning every night. Or morning, I don't know. I want to talk more about burnout and my YouTube journey and how I'm managing it, but that will be for another time because I've been working on it. I'm definitely getting better. I'm more relaxed on the weekends and going to more social settings, vaccinated, of course. It's taken me a while to learn the importance of a healthy work-life balance and that it's okay to work on yourself. I'm not sure if you all related to that last part. Maybe give it a couple of years. But anyways, growing up is a part of life. Adulthood is something that you all should be looking forward to. You learn and experience so many things, and that's just your early 20s. And before I go, is there anything you want to add, Puberty Platypus? Am I ever going to find something I'm truly passionate about? I drift through every day doing what feels like nothing, seeing all my high school friends getting married and starting families, doing things that they're happy and excited about. It makes me feel even more isolated in my state of confusion and solitude. Who am I? Why don't I know myself anymore? What went wrong?
Bagel Bite?
I think that everyone at some point in their life should work in a fast food or retail job. Not to improve their work ethic or anything, but so that everyone knows what it's like to have that kind of job. They wouldn't work in fast food their whole lives, maybe just like for 6 months, just so they get a feel for it. So with that, let's talk about the time when I worked in fast food. I used to work at a very small local sandwich shop. I don't know if any of you guys heard of it. It's called Subway. Our spokesperson was in the news recently. I don't know if you guys look at the news. Did you hear he got beat up in jail? I kind of want to meet the person who beat up Jared more than Jared. Not in person. We wouldn't meet in person, obviously. But, like, he would be behind bars, and I would just look at the guy who beat up my spokesperson. How many people get to say that they beat up a fast food icon who is also a pedophile? Only one, and it's that guy. Okay, but seriously, guys, working at Subway was probably one of the most easiest jobs out there. I don't know why I'm about to complain about it to you guys. We got free cookies. And you know the comic with the Subways in Hell? I was actually working at Subway when I made that comic. I just think it adds sort of a little bit of value to it. You see, the owners, who were husband and wife, can you believe it, of the Subway I worked at owned two stores. One of the Subway stores was in a Walmart on an Indian reservation, because we have those in Arizona, and the other Subway was the Subway I worked at. And since the Walmart store was always busy, the owners would spend 99% of their time at that store. So I didn't really have a boss most of the time. On the off chance the owners did show up, they would just pick up some food and then they would make sure I was making sandwiches the right way. And every time I made a sandwich in front of them, they would always find something wrong with it, without fail. You put on too many olives. Do you know according to the Subway formula, you're only supposed to put on 8 olives on a foot long? 8! One for every other bite. That's just ridiculous. Can you imagine someone just counting out 8 olives? Nobody does that. I usually worked the closing shift, and at the end of the night, we would turn the alarm and we'd have 60 seconds to get out of the store. But one time I had the opening shift, so I unlocked the door to get in with my key, and the alarm went beep, beep, meaning I had 60 seconds to turn it off. No big deal, right? I've turned the alarm on all the time when I was closing. So I go to the little control panel, and I type in the code, and nothing happens. The beeping is still there, and the clock is still ticking down. So I go, okay, I'm going to press each button very carefully. I'm going to make sure each button makes a beep when I press it. Beep, beep, beep. Nothing still happens. So I go, okay, I'm going to make sure to press each button very carefully. And I start thinking, did they change the passcode without telling me? Well, this is the only passcode I know, so we're just going to try it again. And I press each button very carefully. Beep. 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 And it goes quiet.
And then the alarm goes off. I still had like 20 seconds left. But I guess when you get it wrong three times, it automatically assumes that you're a burglar. So while the alarm is going off, I look on the contact sheet for the owner's cell phone number. I step outside, I call him, and he doesn't pick up. So I go back inside, find the number for the other Subway store. They open an hour before we do. Someone picks up with their stupid voice. Oh, thank you for calling Subway. I'm blah, 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 blah. How may I help you? And I go, hey, is Mike there? It's not his real name, guys. Don't worry. And they go, just a minute. Yeah, sure. I have all the time in the world. The cops might be on their way, but take your time. So, Mike picks up. Yellow. Hey, Mike, this is James. What's the passcode for the alarm? Who is this? It's James. What's the passcode? What are you doing there, James? Why aren't you answering the question? I have the opening shift. Is the alarm going off? Yeah, no one told me the new code. Yeah, we changed it. It's the last four digits of your social security number. Oh, okay, thanks, Mike. I don't know my social security number. So I finally get the alarm off. No one showed up, thankfully. Which I actually don't know if that's a good thing or not, now that I say it out loud. We did have a store manager who would, like, make the schedule and sometimes tell us, hey, can you guys do a better job at your job? But other than that, she was cool. She watches my videos, and so do her little brothers. They're big fans. Shout out to Ivan and Andy. Those are the brothers. So get this. At Subway, you only work with one other person. Just you and them in an empty Subway for 5 hours. I mean, we weren't, like, empty all the time. Okay? And when you're not making sandwiches, you have other stuff to do, like stocking the chips, or... We had stuff to do. But okay, we did watch a lot of Netflix and do homework, so I mean... It was... That other person you worked with would make or break your entire shift. It wasn't the annoying customers. I kind of got used to annoying customers. So I worked with a lot of crappy people. And I also worked with a lot of people who I would probably never become friends with, except in a work setting. You see, you gotta understand the type of people who got jobs at Subway. Potheads. Most of them are potheads. And some of them are really cool. I'm just going to go over a couple of the characters that I worked with. There was Tyler. I freaking love this guy. He smoked a lot of weed. He actually taught me what vaping was, and he got me into Clash of Clans. I actually mentioned him and his girlfriend in my riddles video. I don't know if I ever told him that. And of course, I have to mention Corey. He was cool. We watched How to Get Away with Murder on Netflix, and I've also hung out with him outside of work. What him and Tyler had in common is that they would actually do their job, which you gotta appreciate. Then there was this guy. Get this, who was also named Jared. He loved Marvel, and that's like the only thing he would talk about. I can say these things. He doesn't watch my videos. There was Sarah. She was cool. She made me a bread bowl. And her boyfriend, Jay. He talked about chakras and third eyes. He was interesting. And also, there's Anthony. He's cool. What's up, Anthony? For the 100,000 sprinkles video, I actually went back to Subway to use their scale because I knew they had one. And we counted 500 sprinkles again just to be more accurate for the 100,000. And Anthony helped me count. Instead of working. I mean, at least he got paid minimum wage for it. So two more stories before I go. One time, Jared asked me to take out this pile of trash, and I was like, oh, okay, I'll just put this pile of trash in the dumpster. And as I was taking it out, I saw that there was a chip poster in the pile, and I thought, this is too cool to throw away. I'm gonna keep it. So I took it home with me, and then the next day when I went in, people were saying, oh, where's the chip poster? We can't find the chip poster. We haven't seen it anywhere. And I'm thinking, I have the poster. I decided not to tell anyone that I had the poster, and it's still hanging up in my room. Sorry, boss, if you're finding out about this now. Okay, and then the other story. I was working with a manager, and we were just making sandwiches like usual. And I noticed that when we toasted a sandwich, it would burn the paper a little on the edges. That probably shouldn't be happening. So then a customer asks for just bacon toasted. And the boss lady puts some bacon on paper, and then puts it in the toaster. And we don't have a setting for just bacon. So then when she opens the toaster, there was a fire on the bacon. So then she starts to whack it with the little metal tray thing, but all she ended up doing was fanning the flames, making the fire bigger. You got this, right? Then I went in the back and I got the fire extinguisher and I actually used it. I single-handedly saved that Subway. Wait, what have I done? Is it okay if the bacon's a little crispy and has nitrogen and carbon dioxide stuff on it?
Hello? Okay. It's for you, James.
Hey, James. This is James from the future.
Just wanted to give you a call and let you know that...
Puberty can be tough, but you can get through it.
So I just wanted to let you know that everything's gonna be okay and...
I love you.
You got the wrong number.
I grew up in a generation where smartphones were a new thing, and everyone in my class had one, except for me.
My parents never got me one because they didn't want me to access the internet on a device that could fit in my pocket, because they were super strict and didn't want me looking at internet stuff, which backfired horribly. So they never gave me a smartphone. In fact, I didn't even get my first cell phone until I was 16 years old. Now, as an adult who uses a cell phone every day, I don't know how I survived for 16 years without one. I think when I was younger, if I was ever in a situation where I needed to call my parents, I would just ask the nearest person if I could borrow their phone. Now, if there's any parents watching this who haven't given their children a cell phone yet, take it from a guy on the internet with no children. You should get them one. It doesn't have to be a smart one, you can just give them your standard drug dealer phone, but you should at least give them a cell phone in case there's an emergency and they need to call you or the police. The only downside I can think of giving your child a phone is they'll end up spending too much time on it, so you should just turn off their service from time to time, I don't know. When I turned 16 and finished up my sophomore year of high school, I got my very first cell phone. An LG Cosmos 2. I didn't grow up in the 90s. That everyone else had iPhones, but I was the only one with a phone that had a keyboard on it. And with that cell phone, I've had a couple of incidences where sometimes a random person would call me thinking I was someone else and then wouldn't admit they're wrong. And that's how you segue into the theme of this month's video. This first story happened when I was working at Subway. That's right, another Subway story. Hashtag Subway 4. It wasn't good enough to be in the other three. So, it was 5 minutes until closing, and we get a phone call on the Subway phone. I pick it up and say, thank you for calling Subway. How may I help you? I was supposed to say, this is James. How may I help you? But I wasn't about to tell this random stranger my name. Idiot. Anyway, the other person on the line said, hey, what time do you guys close? In 5 minutes. Is it alright if I show up late? I just need gas. And being the good employee that I was totally willing to make this guy's sandwich over the phone, let him pick it up after we closed, and then I wouldn't ring him up and just pocket the money. I'm just kidding. I wouldn't do that. That's a crime. Please don't sue me. So I said, yeah, I can do that. What kind of sandwich do you want? And he said, I just need gas. Oh, don't worry, sir. This sandwich will give you plenty of gas. I mean, do you want chips or something? No, he said. I just need gas. I was a little confused. Okay, yes. So you'll get gas, then are you gonna stop by and pick up a sandwich? And he said, I don't want a sandwich. And then it hit me. Even though the first thing I ever said to this guy was, thank you for calling Subway, I think he thought he was talking to a gas station. So I said, sir, this is a Subway?
Oh.
And I never got the chance to tell him that gas pumps don't close. This next story happened when I was at home and I got a call from a number I didn't recognize. Now, I've had friends tell me that they don't answer the phone to any number they don't recognize, but my anxiety won't let me do that. What if it's your bank calling saying your account got hacked? What if it's your grandma? Because why would you have her saved in your phone? Or what if it's your Nigerian uncle who wants to give you his collection of gold bars and needs your information for a wire transfer? You just never know, so I always pick up the phone. So I answered it, and it was this woman asking for a Lawrence. And I said, oh, I'm not... That's... You have the wrong number. And she goes, isn't this 416-295? That's obviously not a real number, so don't try calling it. And I said, no, this is 416-293, because that's my phone number. Again, that's not actually a valid phone number, so please don't call it. And she goes, three? I don't think I pressed three. And I don't know what to say to this woman, because my number is 416-293. It's really not. But she doesn't think she pushed three. So I don't know how she's talking to me right now. Unless she did. So I said, well, obviously, you did. And then I made a comic about the whole situation because I thought the internet would think it was funny. This next story happened not too long ago. I got a call from a number I didn't recognize at 9:30 in the morning. And I was lying in my bed, asleep. And most people would agree that you're supposed to be awake and productive at 9:30. And I didn't want whoever this stranger was thinking I'm lazy, so I had to answer the phone with my best, I've been awake for several hours voice.
Hello?
You're going
going to have to come quickly. Timmy fell down the well, Vance.
What?
I said you're going to have to come quickly because Timmy fell down the well, Vance.
I could tell it was a woman on the phone, but it was either her accent or the phone being buggy or I just had woken up, but I could not understand anything she was saying. But I could make out one word, which was Vance. So, I did not have a lot to go off of. I said,
I think you have the wrong number.
Okay. Goodbye.
No, 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 got the phone. You gotta come quickly, because Timmy fell out.
Well, I should probably get the day started, I thought, as I went back to sleep. But then immediately, I got a call from the same number. And I thought, okay, maybe if this person is calling again, even after I explicitly told her she had the wrong number, maybe it's not a wrong number after all. Maybe there's something else going on. Maybe it's an emergency, so maybe, talk to me.
Hold on, Vance.
Okay. I can't understand anything you're saying. So then this woman must have handed the phone to her friend because a different voice started talking, and I could actually understand her, and I'll never forget what she said, which was,
Vance, no one thinks
that you're funny.
And even though I'm not Vance, that kinda hurt. So I stated the obvious, which was, yes, I am. And also, I'm not Vance. And she said,
no, Lance.
So this whole time, these two have been looking for a Lance. So I told this woman, I'm not Lance either. And she said,
well, this is the number they gave me.
Okay, if she had said it like, oh, I'm sorry, this is the number they gave me, I didn't mean to call you, stranger. Also, I do think you're funny and enjoy your videos, then that would have been totally fine. She's just shifting the blame to someone else. But instead, she sounded so condescending, like I was wasting her time. Well, this is the number they gave me, and they can't be wrong, so you must be the real Lance. So I said,
well, they must have given it to you wrong.
Look, I'm too tired to be polite. But then, she hung up on me. Like, this woman just basically called a random person, said, you're not funny, and then hung up. So I decided to call her back and said, hey, I just found the real Lance. He's the funniest guy I ever met, and he told me he doesn't give his phone number out to rude pieces of shit. I'm just kidding on that last part. I thought about doing it, but then I went back to sleep. I didn't do it. And then someone on the internet found my phone number, and I changed it. And whoever has my old number is probably getting a lot of calls from strangers and people I went to high school with. Sorry about that.